Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio.
Oh, just to let you know, the voice that made that promo and the voice that you're hearing now, it's the same person. It's certainly not the same voice. I think I picked up a little bit of a cold from what I'm calling my moderately intrusive medical procedure last week. Somebody go to the hospital. If you want to get sick, go to the hospital. If you want to get a cold, go to the hospital. A bunch of other things can happen too. No, I'm fine. Actually, it was one of those required checks that makes life worth living. But I think, like I say, this, well, actually, Gene would be the one to ask about this. If you're knocked out, if you have anesthetic, does that make you at all vulnerable to more infections? A friend of mine told me that it takes a while for the anesthesia to work itself out of your body. And this stuff was strong. I mean, I was out in like 2 seconds. The nurse says, good night, Greg. And I said, good night. Boom, and I was gone. But does that take a while? Is this a likely scenario, or did I just pick up a cold like we pick up colds along the way? Excuse me.
Good morning. It could be either, but yes, anesthesia can take a while to get out of the body. In fact, unfortunately, as we get older, it can take longer. It seems like it takes longer, but yeah, definitely.
Okay. Well, because I was dragging most of last week, and I said, why do I have low energy? I mean, I never have low energy. I'm like the ever-ready bunny. You know, I never stop, you know, especially if anybody knows my schedule, which is really horrendous. I wouldn't wish this on a 20-year-old. But it's, you know, but every once in a while, you know, it catches up with you. The surest way to know that you're doing too much is that you get sick, because your immune system is, at least with me, that's the first thing to go. It's like, okay, Greg, pull back. It's time to slow down a little tiny bit. So I apologize for my whatever, you know, lack of sound. I actually don't feel that bad. I just sound horrible. So don't worry about it. There's so much to talk about today. So I thought we'd have, you know, this being the holidays and this kind of like, you know, a light and, you know, fun time of year, I thought we'd talk about something, you know, light, like, you know, mass psychosis. Because it just is what I wanted to talk about, right? So, we're going to get serious in a minute. But what happened was I saw this incredible video, this amazing video, and I heard about it, but it's 3 hours long. It's worth watching. I watch it in, I think, 3 installments. I'm good for about an hour of concentrating, and then my ADHD brain goes. So if I'm reading, I'm good for about 30 seconds. But if I'm actually listening to something, I can listen for about an hour. And after that, I have to go do something else, play on Facebook, you know, I don't know, go outside, you know, make some food, something like that. But it is worth listening to. It is the most incredible documentary of the entire COVID mass psychosis that I've ever seen. And I call it a mass psychosis because they do, because there's a wonderful new YouTube channel called Academy of Ideas, and they're documenting all this stuff. And they made what they call an after-school special with a lot of really cool graphics that kids might like. But the information is for kids, adults, for anybody. And so they've got several of these, and I've sort of distilled some of them. I got some quotes from some of them. And I wanted to go over that because what's really happening now is that there is a mass psychosis. You've got most of the population. Well, let me put it this way. If one person goes crazy, they're called, you know, that's called psychosis. They're called psychotic. You know, if the entire population goes crazy, or most of it, that's a mass psychosis. So it's like, and the problem is that when you have a mass psychosis, when the entire population or most of it, you know, 60, 70, 80% of the people are going nuts, you know, the 10, 20, 30% of us that have retained our sanity the whole time, we're the ones that look crazy, because the normal people are the abnormal people. And those of us that are, you know, sort of looking through all this going, you people are friggin' nuts, you know, but they're calling, what do you mean you're not wearing a mask? What do you mean you're not vaccinated? What do you mean you're not locking down? What's wrong with you? Don't you know you can't go to the beaches? You can't go to the parks? You know, we can't have school. We can't do anything. You can't run a business. This is America, the home of the free, the land of the brave, or something like that. You know, land of the free, home of the brave. There, sorry, I'm mixing my metaphors. But the point is, you know, and these people are looking at you, and someone, you know, the next person says to me, where's your mask? I'm going to look at them and go, where's your manners, jerk? Who the hell do you think you are talking to me? I didn't have to give you permission to ask me personal questions. You know, but we're in this collective psychosis. And Shelby, and I think last week, and when we had Cindy on, Cindy and Gene, and we're talking about the origins of this, and it's really fascinating, this whole idea of we're looking at the population and we're going, you know, why is it that so many people believe this? And only certain folks, you know, way back when, me, you know, this sounds really arrogant, I'm sorry, but Dr. Zelenko, Dr. Rowlett in Marseille, France, different doctors around the world, you know, the couple of Italian doctors, Dr. Peter McCullough, Harvey Risch at Yale, who I've been in touch with. Dr. Zelenko is a friend of mine now because of the show. Dr. Mikovits, you know, Dr. Ben Marble, who does, was it freemd.com or something like that? Free. This is the online doctor services. So in this video with Joe Rogan, and I highly, highly recommend you watch it, all 3 hours. You know, take your time. He goes over, part of it he goes over is mass psychosis. And I went, well, I have to write that down. So I've been taking a lot of notes off videos. And I'll quote them, of course, because it's their videos, not mine. I didn't make it. But it's just fascinating to look at it. You almost have to revisit it and see what's happening in terms of my mass psychosis and the ways out of it. And what I was really pleased to find, and again, this is going to sound really arrogant, is that Action Radio, what we do here is one of the ways out of it. It's called the parallel structure. And that comes from Václav Havel, who is a poet in Czechoslovakia. And he actually rose to become president after they threw out their dictatorship. So it's really interesting what's going on. And so, again, this is one of those shows that you want to kind of hang with. We may have a visitor at 6:30, Gene Valentino, his fellow pilot, local entrepreneur, been county commissioner, a couple other things. But just he's got a new podcast. He's got some stuff that he's doing. So I want to find out what's happening with that. I'm not sure about Dr. Pry. It's the holidays, so I have no idea who's going to show up this week. You know, some folks have told me already, but I've also invited all of our Action Radio reporters, past and present, to check in because this is our anniversary week. And so we have Friday the 24th. Yeah, I actually started broadcasting Christmas Eve. I mean, I couldn't wait to left the holidays. I was like, no, I want to get started now. I started on Christmas Eve, and this is in 2018. So this is the end of our third year. This Christmas Eve, and of course after Christmas, December 27th, we'll start our fourth year of Action Radio on Blog Talk Radio. Gee, that went fast. Anyway, so Gene, good weekend. What's your story? What's bugging you today? And I have a bunch of stuff to talk about.
Good morning.
Get you back. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hi.
Yeah. I kind of was out of commission over the weekend. I listened to some stuff, but pretty much turned myself off from a lot of media things just because of what's been going on. I just needed downtime. Uh-huh. Yeah, mainly what I'm talking about is mainly the people still in prison. January 6th commission, which is no January 6th commission to find out what really went on. It's just really sad. There's just so much. And then with just how the COVID is being treated and, you know, the sad thing is, Greg, what the Supreme Court did last week, I just want to just scream at them and ask, are you kidding me? It's like, so basically we're going around in circles, but we are, because now it's like, you know, are the medical facilities going to be pushing the vaccines again and stuff like that? And the big thing is all the adverse side effects from people getting the jab. And none of that's even reported in this country. Or if it is, it's just very minutely. And when are we going to wake up? I don't know. But, I mean, it's just so crazy. And then you got the incompetence in office, too. And it's like, oh, my God. Just, yeah. So.
Well look in terms of mass psychosis. Yeah, look at it in terms of mass psychosis, and what Shelby says about this is what people believe, this is what they hear on the news, this is what but they also want to believe it too, because there's other news like us. You know, if we were as popular as these big news services, people would be sharing our show in the millions, and we'd be really popular, and people would be listening to our message.
To say, you know, I mean, that may not be true at all. You know, people are going to believe what they want to believe regardless of the evidence out there. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's neither here nor there. But, we can't keep thinking about when there's millions. You know, we can do a little bit with just a few, and that can help get the information out, too. You know, it's if we wait till this, you're never going to get there because you're always moving the goalposts. So
I'm not
like,
waiting for anything.
You need to start talking positive, and you start to think positive, and that's going to make positive happen.
Yeah. Well, you know me, I act now, look to the future. I do both at the same time. So this is, but, you know, anybody can go viral overnight. You know, so.
It's like there's still things we can do now. You know,
we
are. Stuff we can do now. I mean, I listened, there's one of my favorite people on that I listened. Well, I actually got two favorite people I listened to. And one of them did a fabulous thing last week on January 6th. Actually, she's done a lot of it. And she had an inmate call in. And it's just like to think people are in prison and what is going on, and we just are so complacent. It's just really sad. And then the military and the jab, I listened to a doctor from the military, and I didn't look to see if she's still actually employed with the military, since they're getting rid of a lot of people, military people, because they don't have it. But you talk about horrible side effects from getting it. I mean, these people, some of them, their careers are ruined now. And, nothing. You know, the government doesn't want you to know the truth. It's like, just don't get it. Why are we getting it? Why are we getting the jab when supposedly the cases of COVID are going to continue to rise? And look how many people, I don't even know how many people now in this country have it. So last I heard, I thought it was like 84, 89%. It's quite high. So then it's like, why are the numbers going so high if we use their logic and reasoning?
Well, you can't,
so right there
there's no logic or reason. Now, they are totalitarians. This is all based on control. COVID is a marketing tool for vaccines. This is why Dr. Fascist, way back in the beginning, the first thing he said was, and the only thing he said was, we need vaccines. That will cure the problem. If you want your normal life back, if you want to get out of lockdowns and mass mandates, you want to go to the beach again, you want to gather with your family, you want to go to church, you want to live your normal life, then you have to do what I say. Then you have to take the vaccine. That's what that's their definition of normal. You know, about the court case, and I think you're referring to the Sixth Circuit, the one in Cincinnati that reinstated the bogus vaccine mandate. That's not, it hasn't made the Supreme Court yet. Okay, so I just want to clarify.
Okay, I thought it. Okay.
Oh, that's okay. No, no problem at all.
Yeah, I'm just like, are you kidding me?
No, but if you read,
say in it.
Yeah, but if you read the I've got the court opinion right here. I'm going to go over the first paragraph. You realize that it's pure propaganda, that they are part of the deep state, that what they really made was an opinion piece. They didn't make a judicial ruling. Let's get to it right now. Let me show you how bad this is. Right, let me show you just how bad this is. All right, go ahead. You want to make a point. I'm sorry. Let's finish that, and I'll tell you what I found.
No, I did want to make a point. I just want to say that they have no right to do that.
Absolutely.
You know, put their opinion in it. It's like, no.
But they're doing it, so we have to take that from them.
I wish Rand Paul and those guys would start getting some cahoots and really start fighting for us. And, you know, he's a doctor. He could say, come on, this is ridiculous. Fauci needs to be gone. And if he would say that, I mean, he needs to constantly say that, because the thing is, not everybody, because it's just like you talk about psychosis and everything. Uh-huh. It's like people don't, you know, those that believe in Fauci, people that, a few that like Biden, and those people that really believe in the vaccine, they aren't going to listen to Rand Paul. They're just going to think, well, he's another quack doctor.
Sure, because there's more people under mass psychosis. That's how mass psychosis works. You know, everything's backwards. It's through the looking glass. It's Alice in Wonderland. It's people believing the opposite of what is really true. We know what's really true. In fact, we've known since at least here at Action Radio and various other places, Dr. Zelenko, Dr. Dieter Raoul, Dr. Mikkel.
Yes, I know. You've said that many times, but that
and I'm going to keep saying it. I'm going to keep saying it
masses.
Because it's really critical that the information. Well, see, and I was thinking about what you were saying last week too. We disagree on that, and that's perfectly fine. But I think it's critical for people to know this all the way through. And the reason is because if you want to know the truth, you have to start asking questions. And the one thing that people are not doing, and this is the big difference. See, what did I do that was different than anybody else? Am I a genius? No. You know, am I a very active? Yes. You know, do I have a great degree of energy? And do I, am I, you know, fairly, you know, do I mind being the only one with my opinion? No. And that's okay. So, but what the only difference between me and 99% of the rest of the country, the difference between you and all the folks that are with the show, we ask questions. Okay. So when everything was being pushed to a vaccine, my first question was, well, what kills the virus? Why would you want to vaccine? And as Peter McCullough said on the Joe Rogan video, which is so critical, vaccines are not treatment. Vaccines don't cure. Vaccines don't treat. All a vaccine does is build up immunity for the future. That's it. That's all they do. So why would you want to build up immunity for the future with a virus that's already here? That makes no sense. You treat the virus. You cure the virus. You kill the virus. That should be the number one priority when you have a new virus. That's what I would think would happen. Under any sane society, that's exactly what would have happened. But the difference is they wanted to sell the vaccine. This is a
marketing
tool.
Well,
so there was a mass psychosis.
Yeah.
But this is the point that I'm getting to. There was a mass psychosis introduced and propagandized with censorship and limited information and fear and lockdowns. This is an organized campaign. And what I'm going to do in the course of the show today is go over exactly, you know, the steps of tyranny and totalitarianism and relate it to the COVID marketing scheme.
Right.
That's what it is.
The thing is, what the article you sent me, I don't know how you could listen to it. I must have played it 15 times before I could catch it because I could not focus on it.
Okay.
It was so interesting because I'm just like, oh, my God, I just mishapped what they said because I think it's just how they talk. I can't listen to people that, I don't know, I guess I'm like a kid.
Oh, the nasal high voice guy? Yeah.
Yeah, and there's just something about it because I was like, shoot, I was hearing it fine, but it was like I wasn't listening, I guess. And I wasn't.
You think
doing
I should narrate it?
Else, you know?
Maybe I can narrate it. I'll do it with my voice.
Oh my God.
And now tyranny brought to you by.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. What they said was very true, and I was just like, all I could think of was, you know, COVID, January 6th, and Trump derangement syndrome, all of them, you know, same thing. It's like, there's no logic to it, you know.
There is logic to it, but it's totalitarian logic. In other words, January 6th is designed to crush any belief in the truth about Joe Biden not being president. That's what January 6th is all about. January 6th is a cover up of the insurrection, the real insurrection, where they suppressed the votes of states that sent Trump delegates. And you point out the seven states that did it. The purpose of January 6th, the purpose of this congressional committee, is to suppress that states ever sent other electors, sent Trump electors to Congress, that there was ever an electoral challenge, that there was ever any doubt that Joe Biden's president. Hell, he's still under an ongoing investigation. He shouldn't be allowed to do anything. He shouldn't even be allowed to be in the White House until this ongoing investigation is settled.
Yeah.
That's what a sane society would do. Let me read you some of this opinion. You're going to find this fascinating. Jane B. Stranch. Jane B. Stranch is the circuit judge. So this is the Fifth Circuit. This is in Cincinnati. And then once you get past all their sites and things, and most people don't read this stuff because it's really boring. I think they count on that. But the first paragraph really sort of outlines to me all the problems. Oh, by the way, there were three judges. Two of the judges were appointed by one Republican, one Democrat, but they're both appointed by non-Trump presidents. The judge that was appointed by Trump is the one that voted against this, that wanted the stay to continue. So Jane B. Stranch says the COVID-19 pandemic has wreaked havoc across America, leading to a loss of over 800,000 lives, shutting down workplaces and jobs across the country, and threatening our economy. Now, is that a propaganda piece, or is that a judicial opinion? He said with a pause.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Yeah.
That's propaganda,
okay.
Right? The COVID-19
yeah.
pandemic. Okay, first of all, the real pandemic is the government pandemic, because COVID-19 was basically done July 4th, you know, 2020. I've got the CDC charts to prove it, okay? Then they started screwing around with the numbers and the cases and the PCR tests and everything else, all right? So that's easily documented. I've done it several times. All right, so it says the COVID-19 pandemic wreaked havoc across America. No, it did not, because only about 40,000 people actually died from COVID. Most of those 800,000, most people died with COVID. And here's the thing, too. Did the mortality rate jump 800,000 in 2020? No. In fact, the mortality rate actually dropped in 2020. I don't know what it is for 2021. We're still in it. But, you know, you would think with 800,000 people, considering the Civil War cost 600,000, wouldn't you think that if 800,000 extra people had died, you'd notice it? There'd be funerals everywhere. You know, there'd be funerals going down the street all the time. 800,000 people, that's a lot of people. That's almost a million. Okay? And it's more than 800,000 now. So if you figure almost a million people had died from COVID, all right, don't you think that people, you'd notice it across America? You want to talk about a supply chain, you know, upset. But you figure the vast majority of them, 760,000 of them, were just normal deaths absorbed in the system as they are every year. So this is pure propaganda. Go ahead.
Then you got to wonder the true number of people that died from the vaccine.
Well, that's another story. Okay, but we're not, they don't address that. Neither does the OSHA Act. I've got the Act from OSHA. That doesn't address it either, which is fascinating. Anyway, so here's where it gets better. It says, actually gets worse, but better in terms of how propagandistic it is. It's a lean loss. And this is shutting down workplaces and jobs across the country. No, COVID didn't shut down jobs and workplaces across the country. The government shut down jobs and workplaces across the country. The jobs were open, even though we had COVID. We had COVID starting, well, some people say as far back as November of 2019. That's why it's called COVID-19, right? So COVID-19 started in 2019, started in maybe, no, I've heard as early as October. Let's just say November for the sake of argument. So it started in November, right after the Economic World Forum Project 801. They ran the scenario of COVID just to make sure they had all their ducks lined up before they actually introduced it. So did that in October of 2019. The virus gets introduced to the country in November of 2019. And so then of course, but things weren't being shut down until COVID was actually over. That's the funny part. See, my new contention is that the government, you know, COVID keeps trying to die out and the government keeps rescuing it. Right? So it would have died out in July, but they rescued it with bogus tests and things and lockdowns, and they stressed people out, and they all got sick again. So then it was dying out in the fall, and then they rescued COVID again but with all these bogus vaccines that were designed for the Alpha variant, which was already dead, you know, and that created the Delta variant. So a variant is a mutation that goes around the vaccine. So why would you vaccinate – why would you give a vaccine that's already obsolete to people for a mutant strain that's already gone around it? That's irrational. That make any sense. That'd be like giving last year's flu vaccine. You know, well, you know, you never know. We got last year's flu vaccine. We've got it. You know, it's this flu vaccine. Take it. But it's for last year. Doesn't matter. Take it. I mean, this is what they're saying. They're saying take last year's COVID vaccine, even though it doesn't work. So the Delta strain gets bigger and bigger, right? And so the vaccine's already gotten around that. But then the Delta strain dies out, which, you know, they do. That's what viruses do. They have a life cycle, right? And so then in South Africa, they discovered this new Omicron strain. And what is it? Mild. So this is why I call it the mild Omicron strain. So the mild Omicron strain, I don't think anybody's died from it yet. You know, and yet they're panicking. In fact, you know, Brandon's going to get on the White House propaganda mouthpiece tomorrow night, and he's going to outline all kinds of restrictions and mandates and things like that that are guaranteed to perpetuate this virus. They keep saving it. You know, once government stops saving the virus, let it die. Let it go away. These people are insane. And look at this, and this judge, Jane B. Stranch, Stranch, circuit judge of the Sixth Circuit in Cincinnati, said shutting down workplaces and jobs across the country, even though they did it, and threatening our economy. They did that too. They threatened it even worse when the government put these stimulus plans in. The biggest threat, in fact, there was I was listening to this last night, Joe Pags had a guest that was talking about the former Joint Chiefs of Staff, and he was asked, you know, what's the biggest threat to our national security? And the Joint Chiefs of Staff general said, the national debt. And apparently then it was only, you know, $18 trillion. Now it's like $29 trillion. That is the biggest single threat to our national security. And I tend to agree.
That's insane, though. You know,
it's the national debt.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's the biggest threat to our security. Yep. But we can fix it.
Keep bringing it up. So cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching.
Yeah. Well, look at this. Here's the next sentence, too. Throughout America, employees have been trying to survive financially and hoping to find a way to return to their jobs. What do you mean hoping to find – the way to return their jobs is to lift the damn lockdowns. So this is propaganda. This is a propaganda opinion. It has nothing to do with legal, with constitutional – I don't – do you see constitutional rights mentioned here? Do you see the Fourth Amendment, search and seizure? Do you see the 14th Amendment, equal protection of vaccinated with those who choose not to? Do you see anything judicial in this opinion at all?
No.
That's the problem. This is propaganda. Bad. This is why this is going to get – see, but this is why it's going to get overturned. Okay, hopefully. If the judges do their job, the justices do their job, the Supreme Court, this piece of propaganda will be overturned. It gets worse. It actually gets worse. I only have to go to the first paragraph, and it tells you everything you need to know. Then she says, despite access to vaccines and better testing, you know, this PCR test that can't tell flu from COVID, right?
Exactly.
And the vaccines that
exactly.
don't work. And she says vaccines and better testing. However, the virus rages on. Well, if the virus is raging on, then we don't have good vaccines or better testing, do we? She just contradicted herself, right? Then she says mutating into different variants and posing new risks. Now, the only risk is the government because the government keeps this going. And here's the one that really killed me. She says recognizing that the, quote, old normal is not going to return. Employers and employees have sought new models for a workplace that will protect the safety and health of employees who earn their living there. Who the hell does she think she is saying recognizing that the old normal is not going to return? Hey, listen, the old normal never left. It's been suppressed. But this is right there. I mean, that's judicial misconduct.
I guess I'm taking it in a different term because I don't think we're never going to go back to what we were before. I think we're going to have a new normal. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay. So how does that look to you then?
I think there's always going to be, you know, I think masks, for the most part, are here to stay. You know, I think, yeah. I definitely do. Unless I'm totally living in a dream world, I think like healthcare, we're pretty much stuck with masks. I think, and I think a lot of places, you know, for their employees, for some of them that can, I think they are going to work from home because I think really for some, they found it was actually more productive, those that can.
I work from home. Most of my work is done from home. You know, and I thank God that I don't have to go to a workplace that is trying to make me, you know, jab myself with a GMO modifying DNA shot.
But then I wonder
I wouldn't take it anyway. But I don't want. I'm just glad that my livelihood does not depend on that.
If a lot of places where they have to, brick and mortar places where they do need people to come in, like restaurants, you know, and even grocery stores and stuff like that. If they're going to ever get back to having the full capacity staff, or if some people just are not wanting to go back to work like that because they just always want to work from home.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's true.
I don't know.
Well, see, I apologize for my cough. I'm going so fast I can't hit the mute button. I'm sorry. There's certain things that are, how can I put this? I think we have to return to the old normal and stop calling it the old normal, but we need to call it as normal. I think we need to make fun of people wearing masks. I think we need to laugh at the government. I think we need to do what we do here at Action Radio, you know, calling these people out as Dr. Fascist, the genocidal, psychopathic, narcissistic vaccine drug pusher. That is an amazingly powerful phrase that if people start repeating it and posting it everywhere, he'd be done. You know, I mean, this is how you fight this stuff. The problem is there aren't enough of us fighting. I mean, Josie finds it funny when I say it, but it's, you know, if everybody on Facebook started posting and sharing it, you know, genocidal, psychopathic, narcissistic, vaccine drug pusher, everybody knows who that is. Everybody knows it's Dr. Fascist, you know. So you ridicule him. You point him out. You call him out for what he is, a monster. And that's how things change. But you got to define things. Defining things is the key. You know, the left wins arguments because define things before the conservatives have even engaged in the argument. They lose because they use liberal language. See, I don't use liberal language. I create my own language. This is why I put things in the terms that I do. Anyway, this article, the judge's, you know, lack of opinion, I will call it. So she says, in need of guidance on how to protect their employees from COVID-19 transmission while reopening businesses, employers turn to the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, you know, OSHA, the federal agency tasked with assuring a safe and healthful workplace. Well, they're not. They're not tasked with assuring a safe and healthful workplace. What they're tasked with doing is making sure you don't get sick or injured from things that actually are there on your job. Chemicals, substances, things that can fall on you, you know, working conditions, stress, overwork, you know, hours of work, you know, things like that. That's what OSHA is tasked with. OSHA has no jurisdiction over viruses. In fact, they went over the whole OSHA Act. The word virus isn't mentioned once. Neither is vaccine, for that matter. So the idea that OSHA has anything to do with viruses or vaccines, in fact, one of the sections of the law that I read says very clearly that OSHA can't duplicate other agencies, that they had a six-month time to make sure they didn't duplicate any other agencies. Well, who takes care of vaccines and viruses? The FDA, the Food and Drug Administration. Because the FDA exists, OSHA is prohibited from having anything to do with viruses and vaccines, because that would be duplicative. There we go. It sounds like I'm losing it. But the thing is, it's duplication, okay? So the OSHA Act itself prohibits OSHA from doing what the Brandon insurrection is mandating them to do, even though they can't, and this judge is saying they're lawfully able to do, which is wrong. I mean, why is this – how do these people get away with this crap? And then she gets the temporary standard. I'm almost done with the paragraph. Gene, did you have a comment before I continue with this rant? Then I got something fun for you. All right.
No comment.
So here's what gets worse. On November 5th, 2021, OSHA issued an emergency temporary standard. OSHA didn't issue it. The Brandon administration issued it. Brandon issued that. They did. They told OSHA to do this. OSHA didn't come up with this on their own. It's called Emergency Temporary Standard, or ETS, to protect the health of employees by mitigating spread of this historically unprecedented virus in the workplace. Okay. Well, first of all, as we said, OSHA has no business doing anything with viruses in the workplace. First of all, it's not just the workplace. You know, I mean, this thing is spread airborne. This thing is spread in the home, 85%. 85% of infections are in the home. So if OSHA was going to do anything, they would separate people in their home. You know, but they can't do that either. It's not the occasional safety and home administration. It's occupational safety and health. All right. So none of this is legal or proper. This whole decision is completely bogus. She says the ETS requires that employees be vaccinated or wear a protective face covering and take weekly tests, but allows employers to choose the policy implementing those requirements that is best suited to their workplace. Oh, really? Did you know there's a section in the OSHA Act that says that both employers and employees have certain and distinguished rights? Gee, Judge didn't mention that, did she?
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, how about that? So I'm going to put this aside for now because this is completely bogus. All right, so let me check Facebook so I can see if Gene has talked to me. He may or may not. You know, it's kind of casual with me, you know, with folks. Hey, you want to join us? You know, feel free. Hey, I'll try to. So never sure. Anyway, I got busy yesterday about 6 in the morning. I made a recording. So I finally got our Strike Force ad. Strike Force is an energy drink. Gene, tell me what you think of this. This is Greg Penglis for Strike Force, your source for pure energy. Strike Force is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. It contains caffeine, taurine, B vitamins, and potassium. You make your energy drink yourself. Here's how. Add one pack to a standard half liter water bottle or 16 ounce glass to create a full power energy drink. No sugar, no calories, no stirring, no shaking. Strike Force energy drinks come in original, grape, lemon, and orange. Each flavor pack is a liquid that adds an explosion of flavor to any beverage. Here's the best part. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strike Force, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code WYL to the discount code window at checkout. That's WYL. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, get a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strike Force is at StrikeForceEnergy.com. That's StrikeForceEnergy.com. Start your engines. I have so much fun with this stuff. There you go. Want to get yourself an energy drink? Hello, Gene.
Yeah, that's right. Good. Yeah.
Have you ever tried them?
I've not tried them.
I haven't tried them either. No, I'm going to get myself a sample pack and see how it goes. But I always figure the last thing I need is caffeine, just because. But I want to try it anyway. It sounds good. I mean, so we're going to give it a shot. You know, get my 16-ounce glass and there we go. Was it loud enough, or do you think I should check the podcast? I can make it a little louder. Or did it sound good?
No, I thought it sounded good here for my end.
Okay. Because I turned my volume down because my hearing's still really good for some reason, which is weird considering all the rock and roll I've listened to. Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. All right. So, like I said, so I'm guessing maybe Gina will join us in a little bit. If not, that's okay. I got a bunch of stuff to do. So let me get back to some of these articles that we were talking about earlier and just the idea of what's happening with this mass psychosis. And Gina, I want you to, you know, we're getting the weeds here and that see if I can make sense of some of the quotes and the things that we're in. And this is the video is called Mass Psychosis, How an Entire Population Becomes Mentally Ill. And the channel it comes from on YouTube is Academy of Ideas. I'm kind of surprised they're still there. I'm glad they're still there, but you know, but maybe it's maybe it's a bit much for the, maybe they haven't quite listened to it because it is complex. I mean, there's some complex ideas in here. They've got Carl Jung, they've got this guy Joost Mierlo and some other folks, but here's, let me get through this first, then I'll get to the actual Peter McCullough video and the four steps of totalitarianism. It's really quite fascinating, or mass psychosis. Anyway, the big quote, the one that kind of started it all off, it says, by enforcing a strict conformity and requiring blind obedience from the citizenry, totalitarianism rids the world of the spontaneity that produces many of life's joys and the creativity that drives society forward. The total control of this form of rule, no matter under what name it is branded, and be it ruled by scientists and doctors, there you go, politicians and bureaucrats, or a dictator, I think we have all of those, by the way, breeds stagnation, destruction, and death on a mass scale. I think we're seeing that. I think we're seeing exactly that thing. And the whole idea of taking the spontaneity, don't be creative, don't be original, think the way we tell you to think. The problem is with the reason that socialist, communist, Marxist, Nazi, fascist states die. Excuse me, I'm going to sneeze here. I'll be right back. Hang on. Okay. It's gonna be like that all morning, folks. Okay, I'm gonna sleep after the show. But anyway, this is like my Saturday. But the reason these societies all fall apart, I got a box of Kleenex right by the. Hang on, let me grab one. Here. So I got a whole box of Kleenex by the microphones there. So I'm ready. I'm ready for today's show. Anyway, the reason that these societies die, the reason that the economy collapses, the reason that there's mass starvation and mass shortages and mass everything else that happens and hyperinflation, is because there's no creativity. There's no individual action. There's the more that the top tries to control the individual decisions of everybody and make them all the same decision, societies just stop. They can't go anywhere. People stop working and they stop being, they stop enjoying their life and they stop trying and they stop, all that. They do the minimum at work instead of the maximum. They do just enough to get by and keep their jobs. That's why low wage things can be a real problem. But anyway, if you take, it's like a company that takes the joy out of work. They have nothing but rules. And I've had bosses like this too. They'll put you on basically like a stopwatch. I call them stopwatch and clipboard people. And it's like, you took too long to do this. You should do this faster. I look at them and go, you don't understand the concept of productivity and individual action, do you? So you don't understand the overall strategy and the big picture. And they look at me like I'm some kind of alien with three heads, right? But they don't. The more you control from the top down, this is why top-down companies don't work. The companies that work best are the ones that are bottom-up, small teams, independent. Remember that thing we went over with that Chinese appliance company? They don't really have a hierarchy. They have like 40,000 individual companies of 15 people or less all across China. And they're doing phenomenally well because each one's free to innovate. But you can't do that in a top-down society. Everybody gets the vaccine. Everybody gets the mask. And I find it fascinating, this quote. It says, ruled by scientists and doctors, politicians and bureaucrats are a dictator. Well, we've got a dictator. We've got Brandon. But he's not the real dictator. The real dictator's behind him. Obama, who knows? Either of the Obamas. I still think Hillary and Barack are at war, fighting over Brandon as to who's going to have control. But I think they've sort of said Obama gets the foreign policy and Hillary gets the domestic. At least that's the way it looks to me. Bureaucrats, you got Dr. Fascist, he's the bureaucrat, and the alleged doctor. Politicians, January 6th committee, all the politicians that are supporting, all the politicians that lock down their states, the governors, the mayors, scientists and doctors. Well, you've got two sets of doctors. You've got about a million doctors. There's a million doctors in the country, explains Peter McCullough. He said that about 500 of them are treating all the COVID patients because the rest of them are treating COVID patients. They're sending them to the hospital to get remdesivir, go on a ventilator, and die. So you've only got 500 decent doctors across the country that are actually fighting for people's lives. That, to me, is staggeringly scary. They're the heroes. They're the people that should be rewarded, but not in a totalitarian society. So society doesn't care how many people die as long as they maintain control. And the fact that that judge could so casually say that 800 people died, which is about 800,000 people died, which is about 150,000 more than died in the Civil War, and we know the carnage of that. It's just they're so accepting and blasé. It's like it's okay. It's like when Stalin starved, several million Ukrainians. Well, it's okay as long as they had the ideology and the power. He didn't care. It's fascinating to me that, and you need to tell me about this too, the fact that the tornadoes, I think 100 people died tragically in the tornadoes of last weekend. And yet how many people die a day of the vaccines? 2,000? How many people are injured? Maybe 500 a day or a week or something like that, and several thousand are injured. I mean, the toll per week from the vaccines is greater than the entire toll from those tornadoes. And yet it's just, part of business because it's part of control. It's just very,
right.
I know, it's just, excuse me. All right. Let me give you another quote here. So those are the big ones. In fact, let me get you a screenshot. So I'm going to have to play with my computer a little bit. Carl Jung had an excellent quote. So I made a bunch of screenshots this morning, too. It's the first time I've done this. Let's see if I can, if I get the right one here. So Carl Jung said that the totalitarian systems of the 20th century represent a kind of collective psychosis, whether gradually or suddenly, reason and common human decency are no longer possible in such a system. That's what's going on now. If you don't conform, you might as well be killed. How many people have said if you don't get vaccinated, you should be killed? Well, that's pleasant, or you should be locked up, or you should be made to get it. There's no human decency. There's no reason. Reason's gone out the window. Right? And Carl Jung says there's only a pervasive atmosphere of terror and a projection of the enemy imagined to be in our midst. Well, who's the enemy? The pandemic of the unvaccinated. I mean, Brandon defined it, okay? So that we're the enemy in our own country, right? He says, thus society turns on itself, urged by the ruling authorities. Well, I'm sorry, but that's kind of scary that society can be so easily, you know, manipulated like that. And you look at it. You look at the Salem witch trials, right? You look at the Nazi Holocaust. You look at any time a population is demonized, Black Americans, you know, especially in the South, demonized, classified as subhuman. You know, I mean, this just goes Native Americans for centuries. You know, so the government conveniently makes enemies, turns the rest of society on the enemy, and they're distracted from the real enemy, which is the government. There was no pandemic. It was always curable. It was always treatable. It has been since day one. Let me tell you something I think that you're going to find interesting. Yes, I'm blowing my own horn again, but I really believe this is essential to understand that there was a way to understand this way back when. So I wrote this February 27th of 2020. So this would have been probably right after my interview with Bill Gertz of the Washington Times. And I said, resolution, Congress shall direct that resources be used to kill and wipe out the lethal forms of coronavirus. Excuse me. February 27th, 2020. Okay. This is before I found chloroquine, killed COVID, about a week before that. So resolve that Congress shall direct the President, the Center for Disease Control, the National Institute for Health, designated university medical research centers, and military research institutes and labs to develop and implement virus technology that primarily focuses on killing and wiping out the coronavirus, that this shall be equal or greater to any resources directed or appropriated for any aspect of the creation of the coronavirus vaccine. There you go. Split the resources. Have to kill it. Have to do the vaccine. That made sense to me back in February of 2020. Gene? And this went to Matt Gaetz, by the way. Went to a bunch of other folks in Congress. Because this went all over the place. I just forgot about it. But so we knew. We knew that a common sense approach would be to split the resources between the vaccine and killing the damn thing since it was already here. Now, that's not a great of logic. That's not a brilliant insight. That's just basic common sense. Why would you put all your eggs in one basket? Why would you devote yourself exclusively to the vaccine for something that builds immunity when the damn thing, the virus, is already here? I keep saying that, but that's the point. That's the thing that makes the most sense. This is the part of the thing I never understood. It never made sense to me. Let me give you
that's because they had their own agenda. That,
yep.
You know, plain and simple.
So the only way it makes sense to me is that the powers that be, through propaganda, through Dr. Fascist, through the Obama playbook, through the National Institutes of Health, through Big Pharma, through big tech censorship, put the country in a mass psychosis of fear and terror. And once you can create fear and terror, you can make the vast majority of people do anything. And it doesn't take that greater percentage. And I'm not sure what the percentage is, you know, to completely control the rest of the population, but it's somewhere over half, you know, of people that once they believe, you get that. That's why I left California. I left California because there's no way individually I could fight the collective mass psychosis of socialism that was there. Socialism, political correctness, critical race theory. I had no chance. I couldn't do Action Radio. If I tried to do this show from San Francisco, do you realize how many people would be outside my door? I'd already be dead. They would have lynched me, you know. And so I moved to Florida, where fortunately I'm doing quite well. Thank you very much. It's a nice day out there as well. Actually, it's not nice. It's foggy and cold. So it's been brutally cold. That's partially why I picked up this cold. But, I mean, location is everything. There's a time to stand, and there's a time to get the hell out. You know, make your fight another day. That's why I came here. Anyway. Rest of the bill, pretty simple. This approach shall include but not be limited to developing and implementing viruses that kill the coronavirus COVID-19. Just think about that. Developing and implementing viruses. So in other words, I already knew back in February 27th of 2020 that this was a made-up virus. Bill Gertz told me from the Wuhan lab. And that's what we reported. So obviously knowing, and what he said made sense. Because there's no way this, in fact, we went over the history of SARS-CoV-1. I should get that show out. It's kind of interesting. Anyway, developing and implementing viruses that kill the coronavirus 19. So in other words, if they've engineered a virus to make us sick, they can engineer a virus to kill that virus, right? Next one, developing and implementing viruses that prevent the coronavirus from reproducing, okay? You could do that. I discovered that in my search of what kills a virus, right? Next one, developing and implementing viruses that effectively direct antiviral drugs directly to the coronavirus in the human body. Part of my research again. You know, what kills a virus? All this stuff came out of that one search I did that one afternoon on what kills a virus. It's fascinating. Next one, developing new and effective ways to kill the coronavirus not yet thought of. Okay, so get creative, guys. You know, you've got national labs, you've got billions of dollars. Use it. Do something. Here's another point. These are all bullet points. Using all available resources of military biological warfare technology and facilities. Well, I mean, they're the folks that create this stuff that don't make biological agents and viruses and nerve gas and all that kind of crap. So why can't they be used to cure, you know, a created virus from China? Makes sense to me. Using all university medical teaching and research hospitals to work on this problem. Yeah, all they did was work on warp speed of creating a virus, a vaccine that I think was already created years ago, because it takes 10 years to make these things, which means they started 10 years ago, which would have been about 2010. To have ready in 2020. No big surprise there. Here's another one. Using all VA, that's Veterans Administration facilities, to most effectively treat any coronavirus outbreak among veterans and to research and treat any problems particular to veterans regarding coronavirus, knowing full well that veterans have suffered the anthrax, the Gulf War syndrome, okay, with a chemical called squalene is rumored to be the cause. Squalene is what they call an adjuvant, and an adjuvant is what makes a vaccine more effective without costing a lot of money. It's kind of like putting, you know, extra something. It's like putting alcohol in your gasoline that makes it more powerful, same kind of thing. Anyway, so that's what they do. But squalene is rumored to have caused Gulf War syndrome. And guess where else you find squalene? In your flu shots. How about that? All right. And then at last point, well, second last point, all of the above in combination. So do all these things. And then I said, although the drugs and antiviruses can be shared outside the United States, the methods of developing should be considered classified and a national security methodology, given the potential that this form of coronavirus is man-made and a bioweapon. Let me say that again. Although the drugs and antiviruses can be shared outside the United States, the methods of developing should be considered classified and a national security methodology, given the potential that this form of coronavirus is man-made and a bioweapon. So we're already talking about bioweapons of coronavirus, February 27th, 2020. Right? Last sentence. Congress shall appropriate sufficient funds, offer appropriate grants, and create tax incentives for private industry to carry out this mission. So you notice I don't say government. Private industry. Why? Because it was the private doctors were doing all the good work. It was the private doctors that came up with chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin and vitamin C and D and zinc and the treatments. It was private doctors that were saw. It's private doctors that cured COVID. And everybody's relying on the government doctors because they're science. So they convince you, Dr. Fauci has convinced you that he's science. He's not science. He's propaganda. He's a marketing tool of big pharma. That's all he is. Genocidal, psychopathic, narcissistic, vaccine drug pusher. He's a pimp, you know, for big pharma. All right. I think I better take a break. But that's how I see it. All right.
Yeah, I can't wait for his day to come.
Well, we have to make it. You know, I mean, everybody should every day write their members of Congress and say, we want Dr. Fauci put on trial for crimes against humanity. That would be a good way to handle it. Yeah. Yeah.
Amen.
No, I agree. I think you're absolutely right. All right. I want to play something. I was trying to have my Santa Rosa Volunteers piece ready for today. I've got it all written up. I just have to record it, which I'll do after the show sometime today. But this one's interesting. We always hear about the separation of church and state and how Jefferson said in his letter to the Danbury Baptist, you know, that, you know, he talked about a wall of separation between church and state. Of course, the left ran with that, and the Supreme Court ran with that and said, yep, that means that the government can have nothing to do with anything religious. That's a bunch of BS. And the problem is that everybody reads the Jefferson letter to the Baptist, but no one reads the Baptist letter to Jefferson, which is what I did. So we'll have that covered in a little bit. All right, let me play you what's my favorite piece I haven't played for a while. Let's do the Sedition Act the Sedition Act. See, now, Gene, you talk about the January 6th committee. Basically,
right.
What they're doing. All right, so January 6th, sedition is the act of going against the government, of saying things against the government. It's it's not a crime in America because the First Amendment says you can say anything you want against the government. But listen to this one on sedition and visualize the January 6th committee and see if you can make the relationship. Well, you will, but there's a relationship between the Sedition Act in the 1700s, you know, of talking against the government and what this bogus committee, this witch hunt, this star chamber, this McCarthyist, you know, in reverse, because they are the communists, you know, going after the Americans. It's really based on the same theory of the Sedition Act of 1798. So let me play this for you back in a little bit. Hope you all enjoy this, and we'll continue with our show today. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents,
sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers, here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. This week, I want to break from the Federalist and Anti-Federalist papers to consider one of the many aberrations in the early days of the land of the free. That is the Sedition Act of 1798. Granted, this is always grouped with the companion bills on aliens, but I see them as separate issues. Why would a new government, formed from colonies under rules of sedition from a foreign monarch, bring about that same tyranny into our government so early in its existence? The Constitution was ratified on September 17, 1787. The Bill of Rights was ratified on December 15, 1791. So it was already in the supreme law of the land that Congress could make no law that abridged the freedom of speech, thus making any subordinate law on sedition unconstitutional automatically. And yet, it happened. All power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. Therefore, if you have a government of good laws and yet bad officials who crave the preservation of power more than the alleged guarantees of freedom, freedom takes second place. You can see that in evidence throughout the entire government response to a coronavirus that would have run its course naturally in about 10 weeks, just like the flu every year, and would have been gone by the summer of 2020 when all viruses fade until the winter. And yet, look at the massive amount of power taken from the people in a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. Sedition is defined in my online dictionary as conduct or speech inciting people to rebel against the authority of a state or monarch. So what did the government put into a law that so obviously came from the former ruler of the colonies into the new government of the United States? The Sedition Act is titled An Act for the Punishment of Certain Crimes Against the United States. In other words, conduct or speech that criticizes the government. Where have we heard that before? Section 1 of the Sedition Act reads, "Be it enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America, in Congress assembled, that if any persons shall unlawfully combine or conspire together with intent to oppose any measure or measures of the government of the United States, which are or shall be directed by proper authority, or to impede the operation of any law of the United States, or to intimidate or prevent any person holding a place or office in or under the government of the United States from undertaking, performing, or executing his trust or duty, and if any person or persons with intent as aforesaid shall counsel, advise, or attempt to procure any insurrection, riot, unlawful assembly, or combination, whether such conspiracy, threatening, counsel, advice, or attempt shall have the proposed effect or not, he or they shall be deemed guilty of a high misdemeanor." This, of course, violates the entire First Amendment, except with regard to religion. It gets worse. Section 2 says in part, "And be it further enacted, that if any person shall write, print, utter, or publish, or shall cause or procure to be written, printed, uttered, or published, or shall knowingly and willingly assist or aid in writing, printing, uttering, or publishing any false, scandalous, and malicious writing or writings against the government of the United States, or either House of the Congress of the United States, or of the President of the United States, with intent to defame the said government, or either House of the said Congress, or the said President, or to bring them, or either of them, into contempt or disrepute, or to excite against them, or either or any of them, the hatred of the good people of the United States." In other words, saying anything against the government of the United States, or anyone in it, is a crime punishable by jail and fines. This effectively creates political prisoners in the United States, much like the innocent people in the D.C. Gulag jail for being in the Capitol building January 6th. If that were not bad enough, within the Sedition Act is probably the most dangerous provision to individual liberty that I have yet seen in the founding documents, and provides a shocking precursor to the future neutralization of our jury system and the supremacy of the government courts over the people. Section 3. And be it further enacted and declared that if any person shall be prosecuted under this act for the writing or publishing any libel aforesaid, it shall be lawful for the defendant upon the trial of the cause to give an evidence in his defense, the truth of the matter contained in publication charged as a libel, and the jury who shall try the cause shall have a right to determine the law and the facts under the direction of the court, as in other cases. The key words here are under the direction of the court. The whole point of a jury is to not only determine the guilt of the defendant, the restitution in a civil case, but most important for the jury is to determine whether the laws implied are fair, just, constitutional, and are not arbitrary and capricious reservoirs of unlimited government power over the people. Jurors can do whatever they want because they are the representatives of the people over the judges who work for the government and therefore work for the people. And yet, as virtually every judge instructs their juries, that they can only judge the facts of the case and not the law. That lie is repeated every day in courts all across the country. And now I see where it came from. Section 3 is really saying that the juries, and therefore the people, are under the direction of the court. What the Sedition Act really does is makes criticism of the government a crime and allows government judges to direct the juries that would hear any case under this act, thus destroying the right of free speech and to redress grievances against the government and to due process and the right to a jury trial of one's peers. One could imagine anyone charged under this act would be guilty until proven innocent, and then ruined by government if they were proved innocent. Can you think of any parallels to the rights of free speech today? The Sedition Act was approved July 14, 1798, signed by John Adams, President of the United States. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. Action Radio, dedicated to fixing everything.
Yeah, I missed the first couple minutes. I ran out to my car to grab my Ricolas. So it's one of those days. I don't know why I share literally everything I do. Got a new keyboard too, so that's good. I turned my gain down a little bit because apparently I was broadcasting too loudly. So I'm not quite hearing the other things as well as I should. Nah, turn up a little. Well, hang on, let's see. I'll play the volume here a little bit. So if I start over-modulating, oh, there we go. That sounds good. All right, so we're back. We've got plenty of time, looks like. And again, Dr. Pryor may or may not join us in the 8 o'clock hour. Gene, it might be you and me again as we continue our journey through obsession, psychosis, and sedition. Did that make sense? Do you see how the Sedition Act, this idea that you can't criticize the government, and totalitarians are notorious for not wanting criticism. They'll kill you. They'll line you up against the wall and shoot you. They don't care. You know, they don't care how many people they kill. They don't care how many jobs they ruin or livelihoods they stop. And as long as the agenda, in this case, the vaccine marketing agenda, is perpetuated, they don't care. But and you can't criticize it. Or I mean, January 6th is effectively a sedition committee. Does that make sense?
Oh, it makes total sense. Yes. And it's, for me, it makes total sense, yet it's hard for me to comprehend. It really happened. Or it's really happening. You know, it's like, well, just to think in our country, the greatest country on earth to live. And what I mean by that, all the freedoms we have compared to so many other countries, and so many people, like political people, are just wanting to take it away from us. Mm-hmm. And they don't have that authority. It just boggles my mind.
A couple things come to mind. No, you're absolutely right. One thing is Edmund Burke's quote that all that's necessary for evil to triumph is for good people to do nothing. And there's too many good people across this country doing nothing. Now, there's some good people doing a whole lot. You and I are doing a radio show 3 hours a day, dispensing information that very few other people are able to disseminate in the way that we do. Yes, it's complex. Yes, we take on tough subjects. No, it's not the fluffy stuff. You know, if you want fluffy stuff, there's a lot of fluff out there. I'd rather have a smaller audience of involved people than a mass audience of people that that want the fluffy stuff. You know, it's like even on my own Facebook page, I get much more reaction to the simple memes than I get a video that actually requires some discipline to sit down and listen to, especially some of the harder ones, like the ones I've been posting on mass psychosis. You know, you found, and you're a health professional, you're a smart person, you know, you've got, you know exactly how psychology works. And so, and even then, it's still a challenge to go through this. But there's another thing, too, going on, and that's denial. And this is one thing I noticed. Virtues of the trauma of growing up in three different countries is that you see people as they see themselves. And once I became separated from my first country, I became much more objective. So I saw Australians, you know, as Canadians see them. And then I saw Americans as Australian Canadians see them. And so each time I changed countries, you know, thinking I would never return, which has pretty much been the case, I was able to separate myself and actually watch. And one of the things I learned from studying the history of World War II is the belief that it could, you know, and I've always had this belief, that if it can happen, it can happen to me. And so, you know, wherever you are, if London can get bombed, Toronto can get bombed. You know, if London can get bombed in the Blitz, you know, Melbourne, Australia can get hit with a missile attack. And I always figured, you know, and here in the United States, same thing. And the first thing I noticed about the United States was how big the government was, you know, and the fact that we were at war in Vietnam. You know, I got here during the Vietnam War. The draft had stopped. But the war is still going on. The war lasted 3 years after the draft. No one cared because once the draft had stopped, you know, there wasn't the forced involvement. Everybody who went volunteered. And of course, the people didn't care about the volunteers. You know, they only cared about being drafted. And so that was a very different story. And I still don't believe in the draft for that war. In fact, I don't believe in a draft at all. If the cause is just, people will go, and that includes me. You know, in fact, I called the recruiters after 9/11. I was over 40, and they kind of laughed at me, but I said, well, I'm in good shape. You know, I tried out for several, and I passed several police physicals and actually ended up in U.S. Customs briefly for a couple of years of law enforcement before they had a bunch of younger agents who were given preference at everything, and I found there was no place for me. I'd sort of like serve my Band-Aid purpose, and I was like, okay, see you later. I don't believe in age discrimination. Here I am at 60 starting my own career. Again, you know, So age is not a limitation, and people are, the government's kind of stupid about a lot of things. But anyway, there's the idea that if it can happen to anyone, it can happen to you. You know, if cancer can happen to people, it can happen to you. That's why I got a check last week. You know, anything can happen. You know, and we're never, you know, your life has a finite time. You've got so much time to do, and you don't know what it is. You've got so much time to do whatever it is you want to do. So you better get on it. You know, get to it. If nations can go to war, then our nation can go to war. But what I found fascinating about Vietnam was the fact that we were at war, and I saw no signs of it. And the only signs of it was, and I lived in New England. I was just outside Boston. I was in Lexington, all right? This is fascinating. So here I am in Lexington, Massachusetts, at Lexington High School, you know, birthplace of American liberty, shot heard around the world, the Lexington Battle Green, you know, Captain John Parker, who commanded the Minutemen, who said, don't fire unless fired upon, but if they mean to start a war, let it begin here. This is real patriotism. And I'm sitting there on the battle green. I'm looking at that as a new gun control law was issued by the Massachusetts legislature. I'm like, what the hell happened? You know, what is this? Wait a minute. These are the people that fought and died, you know, to prevent exactly what's happening by their descendants willingly. There's a disconnect here. Big one. And so it was fascinating to me to see that. So this, and I realized that, you know, if anything can happen, it can happen to me. If anything can happen to a nation, any nation, then it can happen to our nation. And so there's a great deal of there's a shelter or comfort in the idea that we are the freest country on earth. Well, in some ways, yes, in some ways, no. Anthony Williams pointed out we have a whole lot of zoning restrictions and property restrictions and a whole bunch of extra taxes, and there's all kinds of things, a whole bunch of business licensing requirements. There's a lot of things that don't make us free. And in some states, it's really horrible. Gun restrictions, just various other restrictions. Huge amounts of personal income tax, like California, 13% income tax at the top rate. So you got 13% California income tax on top of, you know, 28% federal, which they want to raise. You know, so 28 to 13, that's 38. So it's over 40% income tax if you live in California and you're wealthy. And that doesn't count the other taxes. Well, 40% income tax, that's the threshold of revolution. Throughout history, it's always been when the government takes 40% of what you own, most people go to war with the government. That's been the trend. Robin Hood. Robin Hood did not rob from the rich and give to the poor. Robin Hood robbed from the government and gave people their taxes back. Just to clear up that story. Make sense, Gene?
Oh, yes. Yes, okay. Total sense. You know, I want to back up a minute, if you don't mind.
Yes. Oh, I don't mind at all. We got the whole rest of the show. Please feel free.
Just because this may sound kind of weird, but it kind of triggered something in me. And I'm just curious what you think and what other people think. You know, when you're talking about, we're just here for, you know, infinite amount of time. None of us know when our last breath is, whatever. I get that.
Right.
So then, okay, the energy, the effort, the stuff with talk radio, I mean, with politics, not talk radio, I'll say politics in general, and the stupid crap that's going on, which it is. It's a lot of the stupid needless should not be going on, but it's because of the bureaucrats that are there in their own agenda, whatever, it doesn't matter. But it's like, why, if we only have an infinite amount of time here, why are we even putting forth energy on it?
Because we have a responsibility.
Wouldn't it be better just to live with your head in the sand, live in the bubble, in your own happy world?
Mm-hmm.
As
be
you
a
know
pill?
It, or, yeah.
Blue pill matrix?
Right. Or would it, you know what I mean? Or is it better to fight for what you believe in? I don't know. I'm kind of like, now I'm thinking, it's like, what is, and I guess it's, you know, only each of us can answer that, but it's like, okay, we could say, okay, we want to fight for freedom. Well, that's excellent. But if I die later today, would I had rather spend that hour maybe doing what I'm doing to fight for freedom, or would I rather go and go have a piece of pie or some ice cream? You know what I mean?
It's no, like, actually, this is a really
sounds, like,
no,
you
no,
know,
this is a very valid point. This is an incredibly valid point. I think you're absolutely right. But see, I would do both. I would fight for freedom and then go for pizza and ice cream.
You
no, I'm
know,
serious.
I don't know.
Remember
I guess
the Karate Kid?
Remember
the Karate Kid? Remember Mr. Miyagi? Miyagi said, balance. Balance in life important. Like sun, like sus. Breathe into nose, out through the mouth. Hey, karate good. Miyagi say, keep life in balance. Everything must be in balance. And everything must be in balance. So go to Asian philosophy. Go to yin and yang, okay? So balance. What is your balance? What is your balance between fighting for what you believe and fun? This is why I play in a rock and roll band. Why? That's my outlet. This one place where there's absolutely no politics. Other than the band politics, because, you know, I want this song. No, I want that song. Okay, so this band stuff. But that's band stuff, okay? You know, so I play rock and roll. We've got a gig New Year's Eve, my band Starfish. You know, we're going to play at a VFW hall on Avalon Boulevard, if anybody's listening, wants to come from Azerbaijan and Bangladesh and Chile. And, oh, no, we're not here in Chile anymore. I forgot. Argentina. You know, drop in. Anyway, we have a lot of listeners. But that's my outlet, okay? I want to buy a jet. Why? Because that's my outlet. That's my passion. My passion is flying. I haven't been able to do it. I didn't get my airline career through a horrendous series of things I really don't particularly want to talk about anymore. But a lot of really bad things happen over time, several times, you know. And now I figure that part of the reason I want to make this a success is I want a couple of toys. I want a few classic muscle car convertibles, and I want my own jet. And this is perfectly reasonable. There's a nice little jet out there. It's a 2-seat jet. It's got a business jet engine. Goes up 35,000 feet, pressurized, fully aerobatic, like a military trainer. I'm going to fly the hell out of it. That's my outlet.
I got a good question. With that, how far can you go? Like on a tank, I don't know, what is it? With tank of gas? Is that what you call it? Or
yeah,
how many?
It's fuel. Well, most planes have a couple of fuel tanks because they have the balance bar.
Okay.
Most times you have them in the wings. I think, I know this is either two or three tanks. But they all connect up, and of course, now computers regulate them. Back in the old days, the 707s had about 12 tanks, and the flight engineer had to physically, you know, shut one tank and turn on another. And they had to balance it. If they didn't balance the fuel correctly, the plane would be out of center of gravity, and it would have some real problems. So the flight engineer was a serious position. Now it's all done by computer. All right. So I believe this airplane has either two or three tanks or one main tank in the center. But point being, I think it can go either 9 or 1,200 miles. Let's say 1,000 miles. Planes off. Well, the country's only.
Well, that's
what, 20,
a lot.
Yeah, it is. The country's what, 2,200 miles apart across?
Right. Uh-huh. Yeah.
2,300 miles? Okay. So you figure the thing does, you know, 500 miles an hour. It's just a little slower than an airliner. I mean, not much.
Then you'd want to You know, by that time you'd want to take a break.
I could cross the whole country in a day.
Yeah.
So if I take off at 7 in the morning, all right, and I fly 1,000 miles at 500 miles an hour, that's 2 hours.
Right.
Let's say 2.5. We take off, climb to altitude. We'll say 3. Let's stretch it out. So let's say 3 hours from engine start to landing, taxiing up for my lunch. You know, tell the folks to refuel the airplane. So I got 3 hours, and I'm in Wichita, Kansas. So, you know, so say I'm flying from San Francisco to New York, right? So take off from San Francisco. 3 hours later, I'm in Wichita, Kansas. Fuel up, have lunch, hop back in. I got 3 more hours to New York. Boom, across the whole country in a day. The only reason I can't go across the whole country is it doesn't have a 2,200-mile range like an airliner. But quite frankly, most of my flights wouldn't be across the whole country because I'm in Florida.
Right.
So I could go anywhere up to the Rocky Mountains, anywhere up to the Continental Divide in basically one flight in about 3 hours. So for media appearances, for anything that I want to do, and it's got room for two. So I'd have probably throw you in the back sometime, especially if we were on tour for a few months. Oh, wouldn't that be fun? Yeah.
You know, just be interesting. Try to connect with people, you know, and who listens. And, yeah.
Well, and here's the thing, too. Once we get our mass marketing and some of the other things that are going to be brought into this, I've never met somebody that really hates the concept of being their own citizen legislature. I've never met someone that really says, no, people should not write down what the laws they consent to be governed by. I've never had anybody do that. I've had people object to, they say it's too much democracy. I said, this has nothing to do with democracy. This is about as republic as it gets. That the people, we the people, supply to our elected representatives the laws that we consent to be governed by. Now, that's a revolutionary concept. I mean, it really is. But there's nothing unconstitutional about it. It's perfectly legal. We're doing what the big businesses are doing, except that our bills are based on freedom. Those are best based on making money for themselves. So that's why our bills are better. So if you want to take it on a strictly virtuous, you know, angle, what we're doing is good work. And the reason it's good work is because we're trying to increase everybody's freedom. But unfortunately, as you say, you've got the 60%, you know, hot dog chomping, football watching, you know, blue pill people that are perfectly happy in their bubble. Well, in order for you and me to be free, we have to drag the bubble with us. Excuse me.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's the price of freedom. The price of and the founding fathers knew this too. The price of freedom for the one third that believe in freedom was to drag the other two thirds, or at least another third, with them. So we need to drag one third of say a third of the people. So 30% of people want to be free. We got to drag 30% of the independents that want to be free too with us. That's 60%. Now we have a majority, and the 30, 40% that don't want to be free, don't want to be under totalitarian rule, well, I'm sorry, we're just not going to have that. You know, go to Venezuela. There's plenty of totalitarian rule in the world, but we're not going to have it here. Besides, we're guaranteed a republic by the Constitution. It's actually illegal to have a democracy in this country. Most people don't know that. Democracy is illegal. It's unconstitutional. Article 4, Section 4. Look it up. I'll look it up right now. I'll prove it to you. Article 4, Section 4.
Interesting, yeah.
Oh, the things that we talk about here? This is fascinating. All right.
Yeah.
Article 4, Section 4. The United States shall guarantee to every state in the union a Republican form of government. Now, it's not a Republican Party, folks. I always have to make that disclaimer. A Republican form of government. I wish they just said a republic. It would have been easier. And shall protect each of them against invasion. Well, so the federal government is actually going against the Constitution by having an open border because our states are being invaded by illegal aliens. You can impeach Biden on that alone. Well, actually, it's hard to impeach somebody that's not legally there, but that's another story. But you get what I mean. There is a clause in the Constitution that says the federal government must protect the states from invasion. Well, they're not doing that. They're doing just the opposite. The federal government is actually facilitating an invasion of the states. There we go. And then it says, and on application of the legislature or the executive and the legislature cannot be convened against domestic violence. So the federal government was actually constitutionally bound to stop the riots in the cities by Antifa and Black Lives Matter. Constitutionally bound. Instead, they facilitated them. They bailed them out. They made sure that the conditions were okay for them to do that. Right? So to me, that's sedition. All right. So the real sedition, if you want to turn this around, the real sedition is the January 6th committee. Because they are going against our government being the Constitution. And they've turned this around to say that if you go against them, you're going against the government. But they're not really the government. Dr. Fascist is not the government. Dr. Fascist is an enemy of the people. He's actually engaged in sedition against the Constitution and our constitutional rights. Brandon's going to go against the Constitution and our constitutional rights tomorrow night when he issues all kinds of mandates that he A, can't do constitutionally, and B, has no place doing because he's not legally in office.
That's how bad it is. People have to start talking. But you got to start talking in those terms. You've got to start openly saying it. I mean, I need a Nephew Brandon shirt or something. I need to start wearing those. You know, or a t-shirt that says, or something that says masks are for idiots. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say the sad thing is this week or yesterday I was thinking I should have got all my family members. Mm-hmm.
what were we going to do, Gene? Come on.
What's the random for Christmas gift? But I did not think of it till then. Why? I don't know. It's too late now. But maybe
You could do Easter.
Yeah. Yeah.
You branded Easter gifts. So what would be the ideal Brandon Christmas meal? It should be crow, because that's what he should be eating. But that's another story. What would be a good Brandon Christmas meal? Leeches? That's kind of what he's doing to the country. This could get really disgusting. Maybe I should get off this topic.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Let me play something else. All right, forget that. Let me come back with see, this is what happens in live radio. We don't filter. We just, this is like mind expansion. All right, I want to come back to this.
I got a friend that he's got dogs, and their dogs found a possum. They live pretty close to D.C. You know, I'm sure he's going to be at his probably fenced-in beach home or something like that because, you know, as what he is, he gets safety in having a fence around his properties, even though the southern border, we don't have that same luxury, the people that live down there.
What's interesting, Texas is actually building a border.
I know, they're building a wall. That. Good for them.
Oh, yeah. Well, and they can do that, too, because once you get off the federal border, you're in the Texas border. You know, it's perfectly legal.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let me take a quick break, play something for you here. And I might play this kind of like my Strike Force one. I'll play that again tomorrow. We're going to play that every day. But let's get to our message on Eric Colley. And then I want to come back and talk about the four stages of mass psychosis as outlined by Dr. Peter McCullough in the video with Joe Rogan. So we'll be back in a little bit. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with a personal recommendation and testimonial for Eric Colley, our new webmaster and marketing guru. Eric has been invaluable in upgrading our website, writeyourlaws.com. To help you with your marketing, Eric Colley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page One. You can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. Most business owners don't have the time or expertise to excel at marketing. Even fewer have the funds to hire a special employee. And you don't have to. There is a better option. Eric Colley, a consultant who uses leading-edge marketing strategies to increase your profitability at costs which are far more affordable than an advertising or marketing agency. You can be seen high up in Google's Page One. You can dominate Google's local three-pack of businesses next to the search results map. You can increase foot and website traffic. Eric Colley can be reached at 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. His website is besmallbusiness.com. BESMALLBUSINESS. And you can reach him by email at eric@besmallbusiness.com. And that's how you do it. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do.
You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The complete guide to flight instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Panglos Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com.
See, this is what happens when I get caught doing an email. I just heard from Dr. Price, so he may or may not be joining us, but we'll see in just a second here. So let me play one more thing because I'll save that for later. I'm in a good mood. I'm going to play happy stuff, even though my voice sounds like crap right now. I'm sorry. All right, be right back.
Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network. The ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio.
Okay, we're back. So as I have been outlining, how you get into a mass psychosis, I'm also going to outline how you get out of it. But I want to go over the part that found in this video, this incredible video. It's on Rumble. That's where I found it. It's probably, I think it's on Spotify too. That's Joe Rogan's main spot. It was sent to me. I get a lot of crazy videos, but every once in a while we get one that's really good. And I try not to send out videos unless I think they're exceptional. And this one really is exceptional. And so Dr. Peter McCullough, he is one of the most educated, most brilliant doctors in the country today, sat down with Joe Rogan, who's probably one of the best talk show hosts, next to me and Gene, that there is. Gene, like the way I just kind of worked that in there? Anyway, but he's got like 60 million people. And so when he has a guest on, it makes a big difference. When he had Sanjay Gupta on, and Sanjay Gupta basically made a fool of himself, proving that the lies he's been spouting all this time, and Rogan caught him and called him at it. Joe Rogan's doing, here's a guy that used to come in on mixed martial arts, MMA. Used to call the events mixed martial arts. So here's a guy that goes to MMA, to one of the most popular podcasts in the world, is doing better journalism than 98% of the so-called journalists that are out there, because he has the best people on. He lets them talk. He has one guy for 3 hours. I don't think I've done that, but I would.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. So Rogan's doing some incredible things. Well, Rogan got cured of COVID, so it's not like he doesn't know what he's talking about. How do you get cured? Peter McCullough's protocol. monoclonal antibodies, ivermectin, vitamin D3, vitamin C, and zinc. And he was over it in like 3 days. So it works. So we know what works. What doesn't work is the government telling you what works. That's the problem. So this is a government-induced mass psychosis leading to death on a huge scale, and it's all preventable. McCullough said that 85%, I've heard the same figure from Dr. Vladimir Zelenko, that 85% of the deaths of that 800,000 were preventable. At least from the COVID aspect.
But repeat what you just said. How many? 85%?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I believe that. The sad thing is, I think it could be even more. And we'll never know. That's the sad thing. We will never know. I look at all these people that have died this past year and a half, almost 2 years now from COVID.
Right.
And how, especially as time went on, when we knew better, I don't know any lawyers right now. I used to date one of them. I used to joke around because he was an ambulance.
We do have a lawyer on the show.
But he's excellent. But I'm talking about, I would just like to know why there's not more people, more of them, ask us maybe to this week, or no, next, when he comes back next week. Can't families sue the hospitals if a hospital is getting $100,000 because of COVID, like a COVID diagnosis, they're getting extra money to put a person on a vent, they're getting extra money for putting a person on remdesivir, Okay, those things killed your loved one. Can't the family sue the hospital? Sue the hospital and sue the doctors? Especially when you take in the information about the ivermectin, the studies that show it works. And I don't know. That's what I would like to know. Can't they sue?
Yeah. That's what I want to know, too. It's a great question. I've already put it on my calendar for Thursday. I'll contact Jonathan after the show and see if he can talk about that Thursday. If he's not going to be here, then we'll catch it after the holidays. But, yeah, that's the question I have. You know, why is it that doctors are the third leading cause of death? Right?
And that
doctors
is malpractice.
It is. Mm-hmm. But you see, you got to understand that the CDC says it's not. So it's going to be a very interesting thing. The CDC is actually recommending a procedure that kills people, remdesivir and ventilators.
But can you sue them?
Well, you can't sue government agencies. Government agencies are immune, right?
Oh, that's
so you can't sue the vaccine manufacturer. I don't know if you can sue the drug manufacturer. That would be Gilead, who came up with remdesivir.
But even if you can't sue them, can you do something for the fact that they're having hospitals do things that are, I don't even know how to put it, that are killing people? I don't know.
They're killing people. We know they're killing people.
Treatment that works. Mm-hmm. So
right.
Insurance is throwing away money to these hospitals or whoever is. Well, insurance is too. For if they have to pay for these procedures that don't work, why aren't the insurance companies speaking up?
Well, they're probably being paid off. I mean, you know, the CMS, the Center for Medicare. I keep getting confused. Center for Medicare System, CMS, the ones that pay the bills on all the Medicare patients, they're requiring remdesivir. They're giving a 20% bonus for remdesivir. They're actually people to die. They're paying hospitals to kill people, and I don't mind saying that openly. They're actually paying hospitals to kill people because we know remdesivir doesn't work. Do you know what I found in that video with Dr. McCullough? Do you know where remdesivir comes from?
No, I don't.
It's a failed Ebola drug.
Okay.
All right.
Wow.
So it didn't cure Ebola, which is another virus, right? Very, very dangerous. Now that one I'm afraid of. Ebola is bad news. Okay, COVID. I just had a bad cough for a couple of weeks, you know. Now I've got a cold. Do I have COVID? No, I'm fine. I know what a cold feels like. This is what a cold feels like, all right? It just makes you kind of miserable, but nothing really serious. Anyway, but it's a failed Ebola drug, which means they tried it before. They probably had a bunch of it on hand, you know, several, you know, billion doses of it they made up, right, with taxpayer money, and they wanted to sell them. They wanted to get rid of their old stock, so they forced people to take it for COVID, even though all it does is destroy your kidneys. Destroy your liver, cause your lungs to fill with fluid with what's called a pulmonary edema, I believe. And then once your lungs are full of fluid, rather than drain them, like when my lungs are full of fluid, they drain the fluid. Doesn't that make sense? Okay.
Right,
But now they put people on a ventilator. Well, their oxygen is down. Well, why is their oxygen down? Well, because the lungs are full of fluid. They can't take in any air. So take the damn fluid out. And I'm not a doctor.
This is not
you know, brain surgery. This is not advanced neuroscience. If a fluid is in your lungs and your lungs cannot inflate, you're not breathing. I mean, that's exactly what happened to me 3 weeks after open heart surgery because they gave me blood thinners and my whole chest cavity filled with blood and fluid, all kinds of nasty stuff. I didn't even look at it. But they took 4.5 liters, okay? That's over 2 gallons of fluid in my chest. That fluid was suffocating me. My own fluid. I was about to drown, okay? Went to the hospital. There's something really wrong here. I can't breathe, and I don't know why. And the funny part was it didn't hurt. This is the scariest part. It didn't hurt. What hurt was when my lungs inflated after the fluid came out. That's what hurt. But as your lungs are filling with fluid, it doesn't hurt. So this can sneak up on people. And I don't know if this has been widely talked about. I just thought of it now. But I remember I just couldn't breathe in as much. But so as your lungs are gradually being surrounded and squished and suppressed and they can't inflate because of all the fluid in your chest, for some reason it doesn't hurt. It'd be nice if it did because then you'd really go to the hospital soon. But I think people are quietly dying of fluid in their chest cavity, not allowing their lungs to inflate. They're suffocating. They don't have no idea why. You know, until you start gasping for breath. Well, fortunately, I wasn't at that point, but I would have been within a day or two, you know, because I had my chest was filling with fluid so fast. I was down to about half a lung because I had a right lung completely collapsed and my left lung was about halfway down. That's how close it was. And this is after the surgery, after I think the danger has passed. So the danger to me was not the surgery. The surgery went really well. Open heart surgery, about as invasive as it gets. That went well. What almost killed me? The drugs afterwards. Explain that one. And that's why I don't trust Big Pharma.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a reason we have alternative health on the show and nutrition. and we look to other cures. I mean, those people are the last people on earth I would trust. And the liberals didn't used to trust them either. Remember when Big Pharma was the enemy of the liberals? Not the left, the liberals. Liberals didn't like it because they were big horrible corporations. But the left doesn't mind big horrible corporations because they combine them with government. That's what's called fascism. Fascism is the uniting of huge corporations with government to form a single entity that oppresses the people. So they actually commission, they take your money, order that the products be made, and order that you take them. That's fascism. So the COVID marketing scheme, the entire vaccine program, is the definition of fascism, just in case anybody's curious. So let that little tidbit hang in your brain for a while, everybody. that's what's going on. All right. We speak plainly here. So back to the videos that I found. So Dr. Prima called Joe Rogan. He talked about, and this is half an hour into the video, so you don't have to watch the whole thing, although you should, because it's amazing information. But if you go half an hour in, so get your Rumble or get your other one. It's half an hour of half an hour of a three-hour interview. He talked about the four components of mass psychosis, and he said groupthink. So mass psychosis is basically groupthink. So there's no room for individuals in groupthink, all right? And he says, as related to the government COVID hoax. That's what I call it, the government COVID hoax. The virus is real. I mean, it's certainly real. It does affect people. People have died from it, but that's not the problem. The problem is the response by government. That's the real pandemic. It'd be a period of prolonged isolation. So if you're going to institute a mass psychosis, if you're going to convince people of something that otherwise they would reject and laugh at, you have to have a prolonged period of isolation. Why? So nobody talks to each other, right? And those that do are condemned. Now, Gene, can you think of a period of prolonged isolation in this entire COVID thing?
Yeah.
Lockdowns, yeah. Stay-at-home orders.
Yeah,
don't go to
I
beaches.
That,
don't go
right,
to church.
Right,
don't
right.
go to school. Don't go to work. Don't go anywhere you normally go, unless it's a big corporation that's part of the fascist chain.
Right.
Walmart.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Can you imagine?
The big grocery
that?
Stores.
Yeah.
So it was fascinating. They kept the big businesses open and closed the medium and small ones. Why?
Right.
Because they're independent. Fascism doesn't work with small and independent businesses. It works with big businesses that can be easily controlled. Because you got Jeff Bezos on board, and you get Mark Zuckerberg on board,
right?
And you get the head of Walmart on board. You know, you've big tech, you've got retail, you get the head of some of the grocery stores on board. That's all you need. You know, you got food stuff and propaganda all in like six people. Interesting, huh? Can you think of any other anything else that was isolating? I would say the beaches. Don't go to the beach. Don't go to the park. Don't go
to
the church.
I think that the big thing was not going to church and not seeing your family. And the reason I say that because some people, I don't know the number, but you know, going to church is like a very uplifting thing for them. Very. You know, and to not be able to do that, or you can go, but you can't sing, if that's not ridiculous. I mean, who's coming up with this stuff? But yet, I'd be livid if I would have been a store owner, and yeah, people could go to Walmart, buy clothes, but they couldn't go to my clothing shop. I mean, really? You'd have a lot less people in that clothing shop than you ever had in Walmart. So if you want to talk about stopping the spread, that would be the place you want it to be, in a place where you don't get as much traffic every day. You know, just the common sense of stuff. It's like, went out the window.
You said the key words, common sense. So mass psychosis removes common sense. It makes common sense look irrational, and it makes the irrational look like common sense. So that's part of this deal. So you're absolutely right, churches. Now, here's the problem. The churches went along with this. See, part of the problem of mass psychosis is when the leaders go along with it, when the church leaders, the priests, the ministers, the pastors go along with this. When the mom-and-pop stores didn't band together and stay open and say, basically, F you, we're staying open. Now, here in Milton, Florida, they stayed open. In fact, the city council said, we're not going to have a mask mandate. We're not going to lock down. Now, the mayor wanted to. Mayor Lynn Sorry, Mary Lindsay. Come on the show. Talk to me about it. 215-383-3832. That's what I'm here for. But, you know, she was all in favor of it because she believed in the chain of command, you know, from the CDC to the president. Actually, from not the president. Well, probably from the CDC to the president to Dr. Fascist to the governor to her. There was a chain of command that everybody had to follow orders. Well, where have we heard that before in history? I was just following orders, yeah? Okay, or in Russia. Yeah, I was just following orders. This is what we were told to do by Putin, you know? You go anywhere in the world. Venezuela. Well, I was just following orders. Pol Pot's Cambodia. Hey, it's not my problem. I was just following orders. Castro's Cuba. Sorry, just following orders, you know? I mean, this is what dictatorships do. They issue orders and expect people just to follow them. But if you follow them, you're part of the dictatorship. I don't care where it is in the world. You know, Nazi Germany, Communist China, you know, the killing fields of Cambodia, Cuba, Venezuela, any of these places. It's all the same. Isolation. Isolation is key. You have to isolate. That's what they have gulags. What's a gulag for? What's a re-education camp for? It's not to re-educate you because you're not going to be re-educated. If you've got a strong mind, it doesn't matter what they say. You're still going to keep your strong mind. They do it to get you away from the people that have weak minds, the people that can be influenced, the people that will wear masks and will get the vaccine 16 times in a year. Now they're talking foreign Israel. Now explain to me Israel. I got to get Barry Shaw back on the line. But, Ching, explain to me Israel. Here's a country that was formed out of by the UN, the historic ancient Jewish homeland. Right? They get their country. They get Israel. And now, you know, they get rid of the last great leader, Bibi Netanyahu. Okay? So they got some liberal person. And they're all taking, you know, ridiculous amounts of vaccine. What happened to their independence? Where did they go? Israel? I mean, if one country I expected to be independent, the countries I expect to be independent are Israel, Switzerland. Let me see who else in the world. That's pretty much it. Us. So Israel and Switzerland are the only other places I know where people can own guns. All right. You know, they should be independent. What happened to Israel? You know, Sweden's more independent.
Yeah.
And they're allegedly socialists, but they really aren't.
Right.
What happened to
I don't know. It's crazy, isn't it?
I don't either. I'm just asking the question. I'll talk to Barry Shaw about that and see if I can get him back on. We've got a Skype line working. I think he hates us because he called in a few times. And I tried to get the Skype line working, and I couldn't. It took me a while. I spent 3 hours with this guy in London. So I'm talking to London because it was on Skype line, so it didn't cost me, right? But we finally worked it all out. Now people can just call in from anywhere in the world. They can also go live chat. Did we check live chat?
Nothing's going on.
Oh, that's too bad. Okay, so live chat. You want to join us on live chat. If you can't call in and you want to text in, you can do live chat. So just get yourself a free account. It's on our broadcast page, and away you go. So we got the live chat. We got the Skype line. Skype line, the address, the web address is right on our broadcast page, too. Everything's there. You know, writeyourlaws.com, our website, it's right there. Everything's there. I'll try and provide all this stuff. All right, so that's the first one. Isolation. Must be a period of prolonged isolation. Okay. Second point, excuse me. Must be a period of time taking away things that people used to enjoy. Can you think of any? What was taken away that people used to enjoy? And that could include things we've talked about before, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's as simple as going out in nature, but going to gyms and working out. I mean, I don't like to work out in the gym, but a lot of people did. I mean,
I do.
And if you like to do that and not be able to do that, that's a very hard thing, especially when you talk about exercise and the degree of cardiovascular, just everything you get from working out and being in a gym and having that equipment to do it. I mean, that's a huge thing. I think really the social aspect for kids, not being able to be in school with your friends, I think the social aspect of school is almost more important than the stuff you learn in school, because the bottom line is this. A lot of kids don't even need to listen, and they'll learn this stuff by reading and doing. But, you know, obviously some people need to hear it. But the thing is, the social aspect was huge. You feel so alone. One of the worst things in life, I think, for a lot of people is to feel alone, feel separated. And that's what COVID did. Such a good job of making people feel alone, separated, but also live in fear. And I think
so if
that's
you really
the worst
cared about
thing.
Your people.
Doom and gloom, doom and gloom, doom and gloom every day.
If you really cared about your people and you were in government, wouldn't you promote festivals? Wouldn't you get people together? Wouldn't you go to sporting events? Wouldn't you say, we got to get together on this? Go to your churches. Go to your beaches. Go to school. if they really were serious about this, because especially for younger folks, you know, the mortality is so ridiculous. It's statistically zero for anybody under 18 from COVID. They knew that. They knew this. They knew from SARS-CoV-1 exactly what SARS-CoV-2 would do, because it's like now McCullough says it's 90%. I thought it was 72%. It's 90% the same genome. So the only difference between SARS-CoV-1 in 2005 and SARS-CoV-2 in 2019 is 10% of the gene. Well, it's not a whole lot for a virus. You know, so they already knew. They knew all this. This is all pre-planned. This is why Judy Mikovits calls it the plandemic. So taking away things people used to enjoy, restaurants, travel, vaccine passports, put masks on airplanes, recreation, churches, as you said, schools, beaches, parks. A lot of these things are the prolonged isolation. These are very similar. So not only is there prolonged isolation, it's also taking away things people used to enjoy, the gym. And what happens when you take away the gym? What do people get? Sedentary. What happens when they get sedentary? They get fat. What happens when you get fat? You're more susceptible to COVID. When you stay away from the beach, when you stay away from recreation, when you don't get out and walk the streets, when you don't get out and visit people, you don't go to restaurants, what happens? You get sedentary, isolated, paranoid, and fat. What it was like, Americans have like a 15% weight gain over the course of this thing? Average American? Some ridiculous figure like that?
Yeah, that would sound about okay. Right.
So if you cared about your people, if you wanted to avoid a mass psychosis, wouldn't you tell people to go out and exercise and ride bikes and, you know, drive in the car with the country and get away with the family? You'd get rid of vaccine passports. You'd get rid of masks. You'd get rid of isolation. You'd open the restaurants. You'd keep everything open. You'd have people being as social as possible. Why? It's an airborne virus. It's here anyway. We're all getting exposed. Doesn't matter what you do. But that's the propaganda, right? So the propaganda is that the government has done everything possible to keep the virus alive. Every program the government does keeps it alive. Vaccines create variants. Masks, you know, put really bad air in front of your face. They lower your oxygen content. Masks on airplanes, pressurized to 8,000 feet, lower your oxygen even more. You know, everything they're doing makes this worse. Why? And how do I know that? Because it's still here. You know?
Right,
anyway.
Right.
Okay, point three. There must be constant, incessant, free-flowing anxiety. Third point of a mass psychosis, constant, incessant, free-flowing anxiety. You want to try this first? I got some things that I wrote down. What's causing anxiety?
Many things. I think one of the biggest things is the media. And
yep.
What I mean by that is I just remember people after 9/11 and Katrina Hurricane, they were watching the news so much. They were actually being diagnosed with some types of mental illness.
Oh, really?
And that's kind
like
of
depression?
What this is. It's like, yeah, another thing. And so it's like you're listening to the news, and yes, you want to be kept up to date and stuff like that. But the sad thing is, when you, because I just know where I was last year, and the person I was with, what he listened to MedCram night after night after night. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting talking about the coronavirus. And the bottom line is this, it can be very overwhelming. And so you top that off, but you're listening there and not being able to be with friends, not being able to, and for some people, not being able to go to work. You know, and it could be some people were glad, but other people, that was stressful. I mean, where are you going to get food to money to pay for food? And you could say, well, the government's going to step in. Yes. He's fine. The government stepped in, but for some people, what they were making wages was a lot more than what the government gave them. Other people know. Other people definitely got more from the government. But, yeah.
Isolated them, too. But that isolated them because they went home, right?
And the unknown. I think the unknown, too, is there, you know, because you listen to this stuff, and it's like, am I going to get it? Am I going to die? You don't know. Are my loved ones going to die? Are my kids going to die? Or whoever. Yeah.
Well, I'd say part of life too, as we talked about this earlier, is you know, do you go eat pizza and ice cream, or do you be a crusader? Of course, my answer is do both. But part of this is that realizing that you have a finite time, you fight back and you do things. And it's like, okay, well, you know, COVID, it may affect me, it may not. I'm still going to lead my life. I'm still going to go about things that I like to do. I'm not going to be stupid about it. But once I realized personally that this thing wasn't that big a deal, I still went about my life. I mean, like I say, as soon as DeSantis, our governor, is doing a great job now, but he didn't in the beginning. He was a dictator. I called him on it. I wrote an article, Dictator DeSantis. You know, as soon as they had that, I've said this before, as soon as they issued the stay-at-home order, yeah, driving in the countryside, windows down, singing music. loudly. Country music out the window. Damn. I don't even listen to country music that much. I did then. Made sense. Anyway. All right. So constant, incessant, free-flowing anxiety. The person doing the most constant, incessant, free-flowing anxiety, Dr. Anthony Fascist. Genocidal, psychopathic, narcissistic, vaccine drug pusher. That man has caused anxiety with doubt and with contradictory information, and he did hours and hours of broadcasts. Those broadcasts, the coronavirus task force, the White House one, that's an Obama idea from the Obama playbook. That's when Trump lost it. That's when he lost control of his administration, and he lost control of this whole government event. They basically took Trump's administration back in 2020. And then they stole it completely in 2020, 2021, when they installed Biden. All right, free-flowing anxiety, news, propaganda, censorship, death and case reports. Okay? How many times would the news report every day? Every day. The death reports. Deaths are climbing from COVID. Case reports. Cases are climbing. Graphs. Vaccine passports. Everybody was demonized. You had to have conformity. There was guilt and pressure. Don't kill grandma. Better get a vaccine. Protect everybody else. What's wrong with you? Wear a mask. Can't hurt. Even if it doesn't help, it helps. Don't kill grandma. There was an incessant free-flowing anxiety, and there still is. It's going to happen. It's going to be hyped up tomorrow night. Brandon the Incoherent is going to get up and issue a bunch of illegal mandates to create more anxiety, to push more people towards vaccines so they can make more money from their fascist empire. That's what's going on. Gene?
Right. No, I get it.
Now, the last point in the four components of mass psychosis is there must be a single solution offered by an entity in authority. And we all know what that single solution is, don't we? We've been talking about it for 2 years. Should I tell it, or you want to?
Single
solution
is
the vaccine. It's the
vaccine. Yeah.
It's a single solution, right? So these are four components of mass psychosis. Must be a period of prolonged isolation. Must be a period of time taking away things people used to enjoy. There must be constant, incessant, free-flowing anxiety. And there must be a single solution offered by an entity in authority. And that would be vaccines. Okay. So anybody who questions the single solution, in fact, they took away the real solutions, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, they demonized them. They banned them. They rigged tests so that people died during trials. They gave overdoses of hydroxychloroquine and say, well, doesn't work. Or they gave it so late it was too late for it to work anyway. Monoclonal antibodies, same thing. Giving them, like a day 14, 15. Well, yeah, see, it doesn't work. Of course it doesn't work. It works on day 2 and 3. That's when it works best. Works best even before you get it. Works as a preventive. So all this misinformation, it's a single solution. So how'd they get the single solution? They misuse the emergency use authority authorization process. See, the thing is, the EUA, the emergency use authorization process, allows for only one solution, unless there's something already exists that does it. And what already existed was hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, both FDA-approved drugs for the last 50 years, maybe 60 years. Right? So they actually violated federal law by demonizing and making illegal a valid solution that they were legally bound to take in favor of an experimental drug that's now killing people. But people believe it's the solution. Now, here's mass psychosis, all right? The death rate keeps going up. The COVID rates keep going up. The variants keep going up. The government says they're doing everything they can, and people believe that the government's doing the right thing. That's a disconnect, because if they're doing the right thing, there wouldn't be. We wouldn't have COVID now. It would have been gone. Year and a half ago.
Makes right. Sense? Oh, total sense. Yes.
All right. Let me go over a couple of little quotes here. I think I read that one. Steps to overturn totalitarianism. I'm going to get through this just in case Dr. Pry comes, and then we can expand on it later or tomorrow. But steps to overturn totalitarianism. First, this is from the video, mass psychosis, how an entire population becomes mentally ill. It's an Academy of Ideas. You can find it. First, information that counters the propaganda should be spread as far and as wide as possible. The truth is more powerful than the fiction and falsities peddled by the would-be totalitarian rulers, and so their success is in part contingent on their ability to censor the free flow of information. we can talk about that right here at Action Radio. I can't tell you how much I've been censored on social media. I've been totally blocked from social media. You know, I've written the Attorney General of Florida, and it's like, well, the court overturned our law. We can't help you. Oh, thanks. Appreciate that. Thanks for your support. Information that counters the propaganda should be spread as far and as wide as possible. We do that every single day here. We are doing our best to spread proper, factual, reasoned, logical information to people and give you ways to get to our conclusions. So we are countering totalitarianism here every single day. Can I comment on that? I got two more. Almost
done. Oh, go ahead.
All right. Second point, use humor and ridicule to delegitimize the ruling elite. Joost Mierlo, that's Joost Mierlo, said, we must learn to treat the demagogue and aspirant dictators in our midst with the weapon of ridicule. In fact, there was a time I tried to get an Obama roast. You know, like they used to do roasts for like Dean Martin and Frank Sinatra, kind of stuff like that. I want to do an Obama roast in absentia with a bunch of conservative comedians making fun of him during his administration, by the way. So I'm ridicule is like my stock and trade here. Joost Mierlo said the demagogue himself is almost incapable of humor of any sort. And if we treat him with humor, he'll begin to collapse. Humor. Why do you think I call Dr. Fascist Dr. Fascist? Ridicule.
I'm a visual person. So when you say Dr. Fauci, yeah, you get a vision of his name. But when you say Dr. Fascist, it's a visual, but it's also, when you talked last week about words have meaning or power, it's like that is very powerful because, one, that is exactly what he is. And, he comes across as this, don't want to be mean, but like this mealy mouse type of talker bear, kind of quiet, and then boom, he zaps you with something. But
you're holding
like,
back too much. What do you really feel? I mean, really let it out. To me, he's Joseph Mengele and Joseph Goebbels, the propaganda minister and the monster doctor of the Nazi Third Reich rolled into one. That's who he is to me. Fascist.
I think he's just an outright killer. And, and all I envision him is an orange suit. That's it. Orange suit. Because he needs to be in jail. He needs to be held accountable for his stuff. You have the January 6th people still in jail for God knows how much longer. And then you got him spewing all this crap, lies, whatever, about, people need to mask up in their house. If that's not crap, you only get together with family members that have vaccinated. Make sure you all, before you go in the person's house you're going for the holidays, make sure you get your test. You can wait outside in the garage. Who cares if it's breathing cold? Wait until you get that negative on that test return. That's not even accurate most of the time. It's just insane.
It is insane. No, it's irrational. And that's what mass psychosis is. This is everything you've described are symptoms of a mass psychosis. Taking a test that doesn't measure, that has false positives at like 90 to 95%, that can't tell the difference between COVID and flu, to require someone to take a test and then depend on that information. That's not even information. It's completely false. That's irrational. It's irrational to use a mask that doesn't work. It's irrational to use 6 feet social distancing, which came from a doctor in the 1850s on tuberculosis based on droplets, not on aerosols in the air. None of this stuff makes any sense. It's all irrational. That's the problem. It's irrational.
Did you know, Greg, that the military bases, they have to wear masks in their car and while they're outside because they're on a military base? It's like, so nobody else is in your car, but you have to wear a mask.
That's irrational.
It is, and it's so stupid. It's like, where is the common sense?
There is no common sense in a mass psychosis. You're starting to get the gist of what's going on here. There is no common sense in a mass psychosis.
No,
it doesn't exist.
Right. So it's like, oh my God, what are we going to do?
We do what we do every day. We broadcast the truth and do our best to spread the word. We are fighting totalitarianism here every single day.
Yeah.
And if I'm ever not here for some reason, then you have to carry on. If the men in black tap me on the shoulder and say, Greg, we need you to come with us, and I disappear.
What do you mean Hillary's going to get to you?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think it's Hillary. No, I'll tell you, there's a deep state out there. I am absolutely convinced that the people that reached out touched Andrew Breitbart and killed him. I think the people that killed Antonin Scalia, the Supreme Court justice. If we get as powerful as I think we're going to, believe me, I'll get the talk. And we'll see what happens. And then I broadcast it, and then you'll have to take over because I'm not backing down. I've already made that decision.
Well, the thing is, if you're gone, then that probably I'll be right there with you.
Oh, probably. Yeah, you'll be next. So,
yeah.
So leave town. You know, so you better have your plane. Just have a plane ticket, like an open ticket. Although they probably think about that. I don't know. I mean, I'm not. I mean, in fact, Judy McLeod, who's a friend of mine, she runs Canada Free Press. She said that all activist journalists should make a monthly statement that they're fine, everything's great, they're not committing suicide, that if anything happens, it's them. It's the deep state. And people will say, well, that sounds paranoid. Oh, really? Then you explain the deaths, all right? These unexplained deaths. Yeah, anyway. So let me get to the third one, just in case we do get Dr. Pry. If not, we can go over these. This I found one of the most fascinating of all. This is Václav Havel. And Václav Havel is a poet who was in communist Czechoslovakia, who ended up running. He became president of the Czech Republic once they got away from Russian communism. And he talks about these things called parallel structures, which are defined as any form or of organization, business, institution, technology, or creative pursuit, that would be us, that exists physically within a totalitarian society, yet morally outside of it. That really is the definition of Action Radio. We're a business. We'd hopefully be an institution. We're using technology. We're certainly creative. And we definitely exist physically within a totalitarian society now, yet morally we're completely different. Could you think of a better definition of Action Radio as a parallel structure or the better definition for Action Radio that we actually are a parallel structure in a totalitarian society? Right? What do you think?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. So in other words, so the structure, now here's, it gets more interesting. How about, this is from the video, the same video I've been quoting all along. I better tell people one more time just in case. It's called Mass Psychosis, How an Entire Population Becomes Mentally Ill. I took a lot of notes. All right. Anyway, so it says, Havel noted that parallel structures were more effective at combating totalitarianism than political action. I found that very interesting. Okay. That gives you a lot of hope for Action Radio. Right? When enough parallel structures are created, a second culture or parallel society spontaneously forms and functions as an enclave of freedom and sanity within a totalitarian world. What do you think of that?
Oh,
so,
yeah.
So Action Radio plus America's Frontline Doctors plus One American News plus, you know, any of the other organizations out there that believe in freedom. I don't know where the conservative think tanks are because they're obviously not doing a job that they should be doing. But it'd be nice to have if Heritage Foundation did the job and stopped having luncheons, you know, then they could do some good work because they certainly have the money. But there is deep state entrenched as anything else. All right, let me find my – let's see, I got a couple more screenshots for you here. And this one is – oh, yeah. That's a different thing. Let me save that one. Oh, parallel structures. Oh, yeah. Actually, no. Excuse me. I could read this one. So how do parallel structures get created? Carl Jung has a quote. It said, "It is not for nothing that our age cries out for the redeemer personality. For the one who can emancipate himself from the grip of the collective psychosis and save at least his own soul, who lights a beacon of hope for others, proclaiming that here is at least one man who has succeeded in extricating himself from the fatal identity with the group psyche." And that's Carl Jung. And why I think that's so critical, and that's why I go over the stuff that we go over, because I want to encourage people to be that person. You know, I it's going to sound like this is really arrogant, and I'm sorry, but quite frankly, I never bought into this. Never. I knew it was a problem. I knew it was a lie. I just saw it. And you know, and you've asked me, and it's a good question. How did you know? I don't know. I just knew. There was just too many things that didn't make sense to me. And so that's how I really believed that there's no other way to describe this as a massive hoax. Anyway, so we need to create parallel structures. That's us. We are a parallel structure. We are a citizen legislature in a totalitarian legislature, because Congress isn't doing what the Constitution says. Congress isn't following the, you know, promoting laws that increase our freedom and protect our property and do those things. You know, our states are, you know, Florida's actually not doing too badly, but there's a lot of room for improvement. You know, how come they don't immediately legalize ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine? They could. They're not. Why aren't they? That would be a huge help. Okay. So all these things can be done. Or here's the quote from Vaclav Havel. When he talks about parallel structures, he says, what else are parallel structures than an area where a different life can be lived, a life that is in harmony with its own aims, which in turn structures itself in harmony with those aims? What else are those initial attempts at social self-organization than the efforts of a certain part of society to rid itself of the self-sustaining aspects of totalitarianism, and thus to extricate itself radically from its involvement in the totalitarian system? And that's Vaclav Havel. A little confusing, but you get the point that, you know, from individuals to groups to change. I mean, if that works, that's the formula. Yeah. All right. Come up on the top of our second hour. This is kind of an interesting show today. We've been at this for a couple hours, but we have still have an hour to go. All right. Well, let's see if Dr. Pryde joins. I'm going to play something here, and this is a good time to take a break. And after that, I've got – I don't know what we're going to do after that. I haven't thought that far ahead. But as a matter of fact, Dr. Pryde's here right now. So let's – that's perfect then. So let's do something here quick. Let's do check out one thing. Do-do-do. Scroll. Okay. All right. All right, let's do that. Let's play the enterprise theme. And I think actually this works out well because I really covered exactly what I wanted to cover. So that's pretty good. All right, let me just do this. I'm scrolling. This is not my most efficient day, folks. I'm working on it. Right, here we go. Gene's laughing at me.
What is national security? How much is enough? What about the cost? What are our adversaries doing? Who wins between the State Department and the Pentagon? How accurate is our intelligence capability? Are we keeping up with our nuclear deterrent? Do we have better weapons than our adversaries? How would we know? Can we withstand an EMP attack? How is our missile defense? How about the basic power grid? Is it safe? These are the questions Dr. Pryde has been dealing with his whole career. Dr. Peter Vincent Pryde is the Executive Director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security. He has served on the Congressional EMP Commission, the Congressional Strategic Posture Commission, the House Armed Services Committee, and the CIA. He is the author of The Power and the Light, the Congressional EMP Commission's War to Save America. And now he anchors the National Security Report here on Action Radio. How much national security is enough? And now, Dr. Peter Vincent Pryde.
Good morning, sir. So I have a cold. I sound like hell. You know, I'm sort of waiting through the show today, but we've had – you might be interested in this, too. We've been spending the last 2 hours on mass psychosis from both the Peter McCullough video with Joe Rogan and this amazing video I sound from this organization called Academy of Ideas, and talking about how mass psychosis are created. And it really explains the entire COVID, government propaganda hoax. It's been a fascinating couple of hours. So feel free to check a couple of hours earlier if you didn't get a chance to listen beforehand. You might want to, at least I hope so, share this whole show, which would be kind of fun. So how are you, sir? I hear you're not feeling as perky as normal either, which is understandable these days. What's going on?
No. Well, I'm recovering from surgery I'm not in the best condition, but I'm, welcome the opportunity to talk on your show, especially since there are so many important developments happening in the world, even though I should probably just be in bed, recovering.
If you have
from
to leave
surgery.
At any time, if you have to leave at any time, don't worry about it. We've got plenty of show to do, so I don't want to hold you up for a second. I always appreciate you being here. In fact, it's a pleasure every time to be able to have you on the show. But if you have to, don't even think about it for a second. If you want to just take off, it's not a problem.
Okay. Well, let's
see you too,
if we can just stay within the allocated time. Sometimes we go long, But let's try to keep our conversation within the times that you've got a clock in front of you. I don't, so you'll know.
Yeah, time's up to you. I mean, it really is. I mean, okay. I don't know. You go short as long as
well,
you
don't
want
let
to.
Me
it's
go
really
long.
Up to you.
Yeah. Okay.
I'll stop you at the bottom of the hour.
It was just such an important development last week.
Yeah. Okay.
That I thought we should call in and to talk about it because it's. As regular listeners to this show know, there's been an ongoing crisis with Ukraine, where Russia has mobilized forces. To this day, there's grave concern in NATO that Russia might do another Crimea and seize Ukraine, and who knows, might even roll over the frontline NATO states. You know, our own war games show that we can't stop them. And, you know, they're far too powerful in that part of the world. And last week, you know, to as a gesture to, they claim, as a gesture to resolve the crisis, Russia proposed, put forward some demands to NATO that in effect, it's reminiscent of the great statesman Metternich. Not that I'm saying that the Russians are great statesmen, all right? You know, but after the Napoleonic Wars, you know, famous Austrian diplomat named Metternich got the great powers together to defeat Napoleon and sort of divided Europe into spheres of influence, you know, and spheres of interest. And it was called the Concert of Europe. And it pretty much worked and prevented another world war for almost a century. And I think there's such an effort, especially among the neocons who are in control everywhere, to dismiss the Russian proposals, you know, without even thinking about them. The demands, from their point of view, appeared to be imperial and excessive. But maybe I should describe some of the things that they want. They want to guarantee that there'll be no further expansion of NATO to the east, including no entry of Ukraine into NATO. They want a cessation of large military exercises on the borders of Russia, in former Soviet territories, or in the frontline NATO states. They don't want the positioning of any kind of nuclear missiles or conventional missiles that have strategic purpose, you know, that can reach Russian territory from the frontline NATO states. They want basically NATO to stay out of the Black Sea, you know, and regard that as a Russian sphere of influence, like a Russian lake. There are other demands as well, but these are the general overall demands, and they've basically already been rejected. By NATO, by the Biden administration, as unreasonable. And I really think that's a mistake, you know.
Okay.
When one side has got overwhelming military power and can resolve issues in its favor by force of arms, maybe it is time to think about negotiation and compromise and see if there's a way to avoid losing a war, you know, which is where we seem to be headed over this business with Ukraine.
But why,
Russia
though? There's,
is in deadly earnest about
there's no
not
logic to
Ukraine.
This. Yeah. There's no.
Yes, go ahead.
Well, I just said there's no logic to this. You know, Ukraine, I'm looking at a map, it's in the center of Europe. You've got Russia on one side, you've got NATO on the other. It seems like one of these pivotal choke points. Everybody's fighting over it. NATO, I'm just not even sure the mission of NATO left. But why all of a sudden, in fact, one of the commentators, the political folks on Sunday, was saying if the Biden insurrection would just simply just shut up. You know, that's one of the best ways we could avoid a war, but they keep talking it up. You know, it's like they want to make the statements. They believe their own propaganda that, you know, the United States is the biggest, baddest, you know, person on the block. And they don't realize what they're dealing with. If they did, they wouldn't be doing this. I mean, Russia walked into Crimea, which I'm not sure. I guess that's on the eastern side. That's the side closest to Russia. That's where Crimea is. But why would we go to war? Why would we instigate a war? There's nothing to gain from this. Not that there's much to gain from war anyway.
Yeah, what's
going on?
The neocons are arguing that we have a legal obligation to defend Ukraine because of the Bucharest Agreement, you know, which was signed by Bill Clinton back in the 90s, guaranteeing Ukraine's sovereignty on the condition that they gave up, that they returned to Russia the nuclear missiles that were based on Ukrainian territory. At the time, Ukraine was, after Russia and the United States, was the third greatest nuclear power in the world.
Hmm.
Now, it didn't have direct control of the strategic rocket forces. Those were still manned by the Russian army and under the control. But they obviously could become Ukrainian virtually overnight, and Ukraine could get technical control of those weapons. But Ukraine, newly independent, boundless faith in the United States, and really wanted to join the West at the time. It was headed by, well, I can't remember her name, a very idealistic Ukrainian woman who, unfortunately, you know, later on got toppled from power, and that, and I thought that was bad news for the future direction that Ukraine took. But, you know, there was this boundless confidence that the United States could do anything because we had just won the Cold War. And so she was willing to give up those nuclear weapons and trust Bill Clinton and over the Bucharest memo, which was co-signed by Britain and, ironically, Russia, all of them guaranteeing Ukrainian sovereignty if Ukraine would give up those nuclear missiles. And a lot of Ukrainians regret having done that now, because
I'm sure they do.
It used to be that when Ukraine was a nuclear missile state or threshold nuclear missile state, mm-hmm. they were constantly in the headlines, and they were like a focus of U.S. foreign policy during the Clinton administration. And whatever Ukraine wanted, Ukraine tended to get. You know, everything was being done to get them to give up those nuclear missiles. But after they gave them up, the only time is Ukraine becomes of interest to the West today is when it's on the verge of being invaded, you know, and the ongoing war, this clandestine war that's being waged against Ukraine by Russia in the Don and the eastern half of Ukraine, you know, it just goes on and on. It's killed 15,000 people, and, you know, nothing is done about it. And, of course, part of Russia's interest here is to demonstrate the worthlessness of U.S. and NATO security guarantees, you know,
well,
like under the Bucharest.
Afghanistan did that.
Yes,
that's
right. Well, Afghanistan has certainly contributed to that. I think that's another reason why there has been such a offhanded dismissal of a negotiated approach to the issue with Russia over Ukraine. You know, because this could be perceived, this could be the nail in the coffin of U.S. credibility, you know, that if we sell out Ukraine now, which is how it's going to be perceived by a lot of people. But is it really selling out Ukraine? I mean, other scholars argue that, you know, that we don't really have a legal obligation to defend Ukraine because they're not part of NATO. And the Bucharest Agreement was a memo of understanding. It wasn't a treaty. And it was never ratified by the U.S. Senate. The United Kingdom's legal commitments may be different. You know, their system works a little differently from ours. Certainly, Russia is in complete violation of the Bucharest Agreement because it's obviously massively violating Ukrainian sovereignty. I'm not saying that... Yeah, I'm probably going to get labeled by this as a dove and a person willing to surrender to Russia.
No,
I want to surrender to reality. I mean, I think we need to face reality. You know, when you don't have the military capabilities, you know, to win the war, you know, and as outrageous as the other side's demands may appear at the time, isn't it better than losing a war to try to negotiate a solution to this? And a lot of the requests to me do not seem unreasonable. You know, don't we want to diffuse tensions with Russia? Shouldn't our long-term objective, I think you and I have talked about this. I mean, I think the United States, we're in such a crisis now because of the shifting balance of geopolitical and military, especially military power, Mm-hmm. We need to start thinking like Metternich again, you know? You know, it's obviously failed just trusting the Pentagon to be able to bomb people into the Stone Age and win wars that way.
Well, that didn't
losing
work
and
then.
Losing and losing. Right,
Vietnam.
Right, you know? Maybe we need to be smarter in the use of our military power and recognize that these other superpowers, and they are superpowers, mm-hmm. have interests in the world, and we need to divide the world up again into spheres mm-hmm. of interest, the way Metternich did at the end of the Napoleonic mm-hmm. Wars, as a means of and rethink the whole global order thing. You know, I mean, I think that's one of the things the neocons really can't live with, is the idea of a U.S.-led global order, or they would, the way they think of it is as dominated global order, but it's hardly dominated by the United States. That might have been true, you know, at one point in the early Cold War, for example, but it's certainly not true today.
Well, it sounds like that's exactly what you want, though.
On the threshold, we're on the threshold of losing our credibility as a world leader over these issues. But anyway, I'll get off the stump so you can get a word in edgewise.
Oh, no. It's okay. Listen, Alexa, I love the fact that you're here today. I mean, your devotion and dedication to what you believe in. This is the best example I think anybody has ever shown, because I know you're not feeling well, and yet here you are, you know, trying to help people understand what's going on. So congratulations to you. This is amazing. All right, I got a bunch of things I was thinking of as you were talking. The first one this seems very similar to me. The idea of denying people nuclear weapons and then saying we will protect you is very similar to gun control. You know, it's when they say, well, you don't need a gun. The police are there, and then the police aren't there. And look at Chicago. You know, we'll help you out, Taiwan. You know, just give up your nuclear weapons, and we'll protect you. Except we won't. Japan, same thing. You know, and you've got Gordon Chang now saying that Japan should get nuclear weapons. So should South Korea. We, you know, our enemies are all our arms. So this idea of non-proliferation is too late. Genie's out of the bottle. We already have proliferation. So the idea of non-proliferation when you have proliferation is irrational. It's already there.
Right.
You know, and they go to Sun
Tzu. Whenever we try to talk somebody into giving up the bomb, all they have to do is look at Ukraine and see what happened to Ukraine after they gave up the bomb. You know, what happened
suicide.
To them? I mean, they...
Yeah.
Right. In effect, did commit the political geostrategic suicide. So,
especially their choke point. They're a pivot point for the world. I mean, it's like Poland when the Nazis invaded one side and the Russians invaded on the other. People forget Russia invaded Poland. You know, it's flat. It's like the Fulda Gap that I visited when I went to Europe in 1982. And Lieutenant, I won't say his name on the air, but anyway, so an intelligence officer for the Army I talked to on a train. And he said, yeah, come with me. I'll show you something. He took me right up to the border, right there on the East German border, you know, in the Fulda Gap. I was right there on the 1st Army base. He said, well, this is the base that's going to get hit first. I'm like, oh, this is interesting. And you can see, all you see is this wide open plain. And you just imagine the Russian tanks just rolling along 50 miles an hour, you know, and there would be nothing to stop them because the terrain was flat. It was wide open. There were no trees, and just off they went. They didn't even have an Ardennes forest. But, you know, I think of Sun Tzu. You know, Sun Tzu is still as applicable today as he was, 2,000 years ago, or even the collection of writers. You know, you never attack out of weakness because you're going to lose. You know, the battle is won before the battle ever gets engaged. So if you haven't won the battle with superior forces and superior strategy before you actually engage in battle, you're going to lose. Well, these people are doing it backwards. They're thinking they can win the war, and then they're going to develop the strategy. They're going to attack and then develop the strategy rather than developing the strategy and then winning the war. And if they develop the strategy, they realize that even if they won the war, there's not really that much to win because Russia's still there. There's no way we can supply them any more than we could supply Afghanistan or supply Taiwan or supply these places with enough arms and things to keep them safe. It's really up to people to keep themselves safe. I mean, why don't we wish the same independence for other countries that we wish for us? I mean, can you imagine if the United Nations said, you know, the United States, if you just give up your nuclear weapons, the rest of the world will protect you. We'd laugh hysterically in their faces. You know, so why is it different for anybody else? You know, the Ukraine, I don't know why they gave up the nuclear weapons. I don't know why they would think that this was a good idea.
Well, they trusted the United States, that such faith as in the U.S. as the victor in the Cold War, you know, and that's basically why. And they were liberal Democrats, you know, wanted to be accepted into the West. And they were willing to almost do anything for that. But Russia has always considered, you know, this whole idea of bringing Ukraine into the NATO alliance, which is a possibility. I mean, Ukraine is in already what we consider, it's called the Partnership for Peace. And this is an interim step toward becoming part of the NATO alliance. And that would put NATO, right on Russia's doorstep. Historically, Russia has always owned Ukraine, and it has been to them an enormously important military buffer from invasion from the West. So it's not like they don't have a legitimate security interest. And it's expecting a lot for us to expand NATO, you know, further and further to the east all the time, and that's not going to bring us into serious confrontation with Russia, which is one of the most paranoid strategic cultures in the world because of their long and bloody history.
They've been invaded by Bismarck and Hitler and Napoleon and the Kaiser in World War One.
Right.
Have I missed anybody? Who hasn't invaded Russia at some point? Yeah.
Sweden under Gustavus Adolphus. When I was a young man and on the House Armed Services Committee, one of my jobs was I had the portfolio on NATO enlargement for the House Armed Services Committee. And they sent me on a lot of trips to visit, you know, the countries that are now in NATO, you know, Poland, the Baltic states, Romania, all of them, to meet with their political military leaders, so that the committee would have an independent view on, should we be getting into this? Should we expand in NATO? Because, of course, the State Department wanted to do it. All the neocons wanted to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of pressure on me to conform to that view, but I did not advise the Congress. I remember sitting down with the late, great Chairman Floyd Spence and having a serious conversation with him after all it was done, after all of my traveling over there. And I said, you know, these countries are, you know, the Russians have pulled out, you know, all of the military hardware. They are economically bankrupt. They're not capable of defending themselves. So we would have to defend them if they came into NATO. They're not going to be adding anything in terms of economic power or military capabilities to NATO. And the only way we're really going to be able to defend them is with the nuclear umbrella, you know, the threat of the use of tactical or strategic weapons, because NATO, European NATO, and the U.S. part of NATO, you know, doesn't have the capability to project power into Eastern Europe. You know, we were never set up for that. We weren't set up for an offensive war where we would project power into that part of the world to defeat the Russian army. You know, we were set up, as you were pointing out, to defend the Fulda Gap, you know, against the Russian hordes that were going to come storming in,
to Western Europe. Western Europe, not Eastern
Europe.
Europe.
It's a completely different strategy. Yeah. And now you're going to take, you know, the military infrastructure that was designed for that kind of a war, a defensive war of Western Europe, and expect it to be able to project power eastward, enough power to defeat Russia, is not going to happen, you know? And we wouldn't be able to win such a war. And not only that, but it's guaranteed to bring us into confrontation with Russia. You know, we've just ended the Cold War. If we want to end it and have a chance of bringing Russia into the Western sphere as an ally, we ought not to do this. You know, it's going to have just the opposite effect of what we would like in the big picture of things. But Mr. Spence actually agreed with me, but he said it's too late. You know, there's too much momentum, you know,
it's
behind
never too late.
This. Yeah, well,
that's mass psychosis. That's what we talked about
that.
Earlier.
I know you know, right? We had a conversation like that. Sometimes, my friend, it is too late. And anyway, it happened. And, you know, I wrote my memos against NATO enlargement. We had a couple of hearings on it. I was pleased to see that some members actually got it, you know. But in the end of the day, you know, the House Armed Services Committee, by itself, you know, wasn't enough to turn the tide on this, and here we are facing a possible World War III that we can't win. And the
that's
damn
irrational.
Neocons think, they think the people in charge, you know, despite Afghanistan and all the disasters we've had, they think it's 1980 or something, and that we've got the kind of military capabilities that we had back in those days, you know, and that we.
I think it's 1945. I don't think they realize that they're still in a World War II mentality, that we have the arms and we can control the world. We're the world's police force. But there's nothing in Ukraine. You know, the fact that we're challenged, Ukraine, the best thing we can do from Ukraine is ignore it. Go away. Leave it alone. Don't talk about it. It's vital to Russia. It's right next to Russia, so they're going to defend it. They can roll the troops in. How far do we have to go to send anybody in? And if we do win the war, how long would we be able to stay there? As soon as we get weak or there's a budget cut or something like that, who's going to move right back in? This is irrational. This is illogical. There's no point in this. This is the most ridiculous thing, which is exactly why I think the permanent war class wants to go for it. Let me get Pianki wants to talk to you. So soon, whenever we take a break, I'll get him on the line for you too.
Okay, sure.
All right, let's bring him on. You got 5 minutes left if you want to do the half hour. So that's why I want to get Pianki on. Pianki on with Dr. Peter Pry, who is courageous enough to be on the show today after not feeling all that great. So anyway, go ahead. Pianki, you have a question?
Good morning, Greg, Gene, and Peter. I just want to say that I really appreciate all that you've done on behalf of myself and my family and American people. You're really an inspiration. You're a role model. And, you know, we stand with you in the perils that you're about to face. So thank
you. So get better. We need you. We need your voice.
Well, thank you. Well, that's why I'm here today. You know, I also welcome the opportunity to have a platform and, you know, hate missing any opportunity. So that's why I'm here today, even though it's not under the most pleasant circumstances. Mm-hmm. And how could I not speak out when we've got such an important development that happened last week, you know, with this offer from Russia to, in effect, have a new concert of Europe, have a new understanding. In fact, it even goes, some of it, there are some issues we've talked about on your show, and it's being debated about now among the elites about when the Red Army pulled out of the Warsaw Pact. You know, was there a promise by us, you know, to not expand NATO eastward? And, you know, the apparently Jim Baker, who was the Secretary of State at the time, you know, allegedly told Gorbachev that, you know, don't worry, we're not going to occupy the areas, you know, NATO will not move eastward to occupy the areas that are falling from the Warsaw Pact, okay? And but there's an article today, I mean, there's a controversy over whether he said that or not. You know, Gorbachev, who lives in the West now, claims that Baker didn't say that, that he was referring to not moving into East Germany, you know, which doesn't make a lot of sense, you know, because East Germany didn't even exist after the fall of the wall. It's hard to believe that the Russians, the Soviet General Staff, wouldn't have made at least an assumption, you know, oh, the Cold War is over, that they would have pulled out those troops or not made an attempt to keep the Warsaw Pact, you know, standing if there weren't some kind of assurances, you know, that we were not going to move eastward. But regardless of whether such a promise was made or whether or not there was such an understanding, it's just an objective reality that if you're going to move NATO eastward and you can't defend NATO when you move it eastward, that you're setting yourself up for getting in a war with Russia and losing the war with Russia and not having good relations with Russia, which we pretty desperately need if you think about, you know, the global balance of power. Right now, you know, we are facing the biggest threat the free world has ever faced from an alliance between Russia and China, North Korea and Iran. You know, if we could split that,
yes,
you know, if
exactly.
we could
That's what we should be doing.
Get Russia onto our side, or at least get them to be neutral. Yeah. You know, that would paralyze China. You know, I think China, you know, needs the vast nuclear firepower of Russia combined with their technology, you know, harnessed to China's economic engine, you know, to achieve global domination. And, you know, that would throw a real monkey wrench into their plans if we could do that. And, our people are playing the game. I mean, you know, it all seems to be pushing in a direction that's going to try to provoke a conflict with Russia that we're not going to be able to win.
Which would be the single dumbest thing these people can do. But I do believe they love to be at war somewhere, and they think they can do anything. I think NATO, this is one of the problems, too. I don't know what you think of this. They're treating NATO like a business franchise, that the more countries that come in, I don't know if they make money off this, if there's some kind of economic incentive, but NATO is a military defensive alliance against the Soviet Union, and the Soviet Union doesn't exist anymore. It's now the Russian Federation. So the whole purpose of NATO is already suspect. And yet this is what they seem to be doing. It just, none of this makes any sense to me.
Why all these countries, including countries like Montenegro, you know, little place like that is brought into NATO, and it's because of corruption. You know, these countries want to come into NATO, and they know they're willing to bribe their way in. I actually saw it happening when I was on the Armed Services Committee. In fact, they tried to bribe me.
Interesting.
They would put me up. They would roll out the red carpet for me. I got to in Romania. I got to sleep. They put me up in Ceausescu's palace. I got to sleep in Ceausescu's bed.
Wow.
I even got to use Ceausescu's toilet. The guy had a solid gold toilet.
Jeez.
You know, and you know, all of this was to sort of butter me up. You know, they were bringing me to the best restaurants. They awarded me a medal in front of the Romanian Navy, okay, for I don't know what, but I just found myself in the middle of a ceremony and being awarded a medal, you know, anything. And here I was just a congressional staffer. So you can imagine, you know, what kind of
they had a whole file on you.
Going on
they knew exactly who you
people.
Were.
I know that there were senators, for example, who were offered titles of nobility if they were willing, which is of course unconstitutional, but it didn't stop them from accepting them, you know. Offered titles of nobility, dukedoms, and things like that, if they would if they would support the entry of these countries into NATO. And so that's one of the big reasons, I think, that in addition, of course, it was ideological. The main driver was always the neocon. You know, oh, we won the Cold War. It's the American century. Now we need to move east, you know, a sense of triumphalism, misplaced triumphalism. So there was,
and the British
that was
Empire.
Always the most powerful engine. But
their empire
you can
builders.
Also underestimate the, you know, the corruption involved, you know, in terms of bribing these countries, bribing their way into NATO and NATO being willing to accept the bribes. And then there's another insidious dimension that almost never gets talked about. You know, the left, the European Union especially, you know, has got a very call it a cultural imperialist kind of an attitude. They want to spread wokeness everywhere, you know.
Okay.
And the East European countries tend to be a lot more conservative. And so one of the things, for example, we didn't even know it, but one of the things that was being imposed on new NATO member states is they had to, for example, accept gay weddings, okay, and be LGBT friendly. And, you know, these are very traditional societies, and there was a lot of reluctance for that. But the thing is, the United States didn't even know. We didn't even know that part of the price that these countries were having to pay to come into NATO was to accept the cultural norms,
of
you know, of the European Union, you know, when it came to all kinds of things, economics, education, you know, and sexual relations and things of that sort. And they were willing to do it because they were so afraid of the Soviet Union. But there was a lot of reluctance and bitterness about some of that, you know, because they knew it was not going to go over well with their people, you know, to suddenly have to kowtow to the European Union. You can see some of the, and there's some rebellion against that today over immigration policy, for example.
Oh, yeah, Poland and Belarus.
Old East European countries. Yeah, you've got to open your borders. You've got to let these people in. But, you know, the Hungarians and the Poles, the others are basically, you know, giving them the middle finger, as they should, and, you know, and say, no, we're not going to do it.
Hey, the nation state works. We're over time. Right. I just want to let you know you're about 4 or 5 minutes past the bottom of the hour. I don't know how long you want to stay, but you've definitely, given. I do have one more question for you, and that's about it. I say I got a cold too, so we're all kind of suffering today. But we're doing
okay.
As you are.
Well,
I wish you speedy recovery. I really
do.
One more question.
Thank you.
So Ukraine. What people understand about Ukraine, mostly in this country, is what happened during the impeachment. They know about Vindman, who actually was almost Secretary of Defense for Ukraine, which would have allowed us to strip his citizenship because you can't serve in another country's military or government if you're a naturalized citizen. You can lose your citizenship, which I thought was really – that was what I was calling for. But the impeachment, the connections that we had in previous administrations, is there something in Ukraine, the fact that they gave Hunter Biden, you know, some ridiculous deals and things like that, is there a Biden connection to Ukraine, you know, below the surface that has sort of been hidden for a while that is causing Biden to want to help Ukraine as opposed to the United States to want to help Ukraine?
You know, that's a really good question. I have to admit, I haven't even thought about it. But it does seem very likely.
That's my job.
You know, after all, the reason they were bribing Hunter Biden, you know, and giving him tens of millions of dollars was to influence his father. And so, I mean, I think that's a really good point, you know, that you can't overlook the corruption angle that, you know, that Biden may feel, oh, these guys are paying me lots of money and the hell with the country or NATO's interests and all the rest. He's going to do what's in his personal financial interest. That's one. That's the reason we don't want presidents to be bribed, you know, so that they don't have a conflict of interest of that sort. Good point.
Yeah, thank you. Well, like I said, if you wanted to use that in your next article, feel free, but I think it'd be fascinating to explore it. But you look at China, and he won't say anything against China. You know, his loyalty is to his family political mafia. It's not to this country. It never has been, you know, so this is why you want presidents actually to be presidents. You know, we got a guy there that was, you know, this is the first time in, I think, our history where the government has picked the government rather than the people. So that's something to think about.
Yes.
So you got a corrupt person. He's still under an ongoing investigation. I made this point several times. He's got audits. You know, he shouldn't be doing anything. But I think it'd be really interesting, you know, because I know you know folks, but if you think about this week, and if you don't want to come back next week, like the day after Christmas, something like that, feel free to take a couple of weeks. But I think that's the great uninvestigated thing is our connections to Ukraine and whether this is personal. I just thought of it too.
Right.
I
agree with you.
Okay.
Well, let it end on that depressing note. And despite everything wrong going in the world, Merry Christmas to you and to all.
Merry Christmas to you, my friend. It is always a pleasure to have you on the show, even if we do get technical sometimes. But, no, I just love having you on the show. So you'll always have a place on Action Radio.
Okay,
yeah, Merry Christmas,
so much.
Peter.
Okay, thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
Right. Bye, Mr. Pry. Bye now.
Merry Christmas.
Wow. You want to talk about devotion? You know, you want to talk about character? You want to talk about, you know, he just came out of, and he said it, I wasn't going to say it, but he said it himself, you know, kidney cancer surgery. And so I'll ask him the details off the air if he wants to let us know what's going on. But that was incredible. And so this is the kind of thing that needs to go to, you know, members of Congress. I mean, I send out Peter's reports all the time, you know, to certainly my congressman. But they're, you know, they've got problems. They're dealing with other stuff. They're not dealing with the biggest issue. But, you know, I literally just thought of that, you know, during the course of this conversation, what if this is a personal thing? Why else would they be motivated to go into Ukraine? You know, other than the fact that, you know, there might be business. Why does he protect China? Business deals. I call Biden the Chinese ambassador Biden. Anyway, we got 20 minutes. We're totally open. We got Pianki. We got Gene. We got me. So whatever's on your mind, I'm just going to open it up. You know, I've got articles, but I don't want to get started on one. We'll think of something for tomorrow. Pianki, did you have a chance to listen to our earlier discussion of mass psychosis and some of the psychological things on here?
I've been listening to you and all your sniffles.
I'm so sorry about that. I got, you know. I'm trying not to, but it's like better not breathe. I think it's better that I breathe. Okay.
We're three amigos.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, you got a cold too? Gene, do you have a cold? Are you joining us?
I don't have a cold.
No,
no, I don't have a cold. Just allergies.
Just me? All right. Well, what do you think? Let's talk about what's going to happen tomorrow night. Like I said, I don't want to start a big article. I've got more stuff on OSHA, the original OSHA Act, and probably in the court case we can do that. But what do you think? What do you think Brandon's going to try and implement tomorrow night? He's got this big speech all planned to order us something. Anybody got any speculations of what you think might happen? I'll just sit here and sniffle.
I don't know if he's got his directive yet, so he really don't know himself.
Okay, well, given the fact that everything the government does perpetuates this virus, they do everything they can to keep it alive. Let's look at it from that perspective. What will keep this thing alive the longest? National lockdowns? A national vaccine mandate? Would he use the IRS to withhold refunds? You know, what are the possibilities here? I'm not saying anything they haven't already thought of, okay? They just don't have the guts to necessarily do it yet. But what could they do? Martial law? Well, let's think about this for a second. They are so dedicated to this mass psychosis, I think they believe it themselves. You know, the whole idea that the plague of the unvaccinated, are they going to start rounding people up who are unvaccinated? I mean, are they going to do like Australia does and have gulags of people that want to keep their health? You know, they still haven't proven this thing is dangerous yet. We've lost 40-some-odd thousand people from COVID. 40,000. Well, that's a lot of people. But you lose 80,000 to flu. We're a country of 330 million. You know, how many murders are in the country every year? How many people die in car accidents? It's a pretty high number. More people die in car accidents than from COVID.
Yeah. Well, you know, at this point in time, the speech talks on COVID and the scare tactics really don't concern me because I myself is beyond it. I read through it and see what's going on. Mm-hmm. But the answer to your question, if it's working for them, they will continue to use it. You put the key in the ignition, you turn it, and something positive happens along your agenda lies of right. notions, then they'll continue to use it.
So in terms of mass psychosis, then, how do we break the mass psychosis? We've outlined, you know, free flow of information, getting rid of the censorship, using ridicule and humor, creating a parallel structure. We've actually created a parallel legislature. A citizen legislature is like the – I never thought about this until I looked at the video. And I said, damn, we are a parallel structure. We are a separate citizen legislature writing the bills that we choose to be governed by that Congress and the state legislatures and the local governments are incapable of writing. I know, because if they were capable, they'd already do it. They'd already be doing it, but they're not. And our stuff is not that – some of the stuff's not that controversial. What, an illegal alien free zone? I mean, why is that controversial compared to a sanctuary city? The sanctuary city is illegal. Ours is perfectly illegal because illegal aliens can't be here. So why is what I'm doing controversial? Yeah. Why is what they're doing that's illegal not controversial? I don't understand.
Yeah, what they're doing will ultimately fail because people will no longer be afraid to go into the basement.
Hey, Greg, I'm not hearing anything.
I hear you, Gene.
I think we may have lost connection with you. Oh, boy.
Well, see, it's like the Arabian Nights. If you say the right words in the proper order, then things happen.
Right, yeah, that's for sure. Hopefully we are getting feedback anyway.
Yeah, I had to turn that off. But no, I mean, that's the way it usually exists. Hello, Greg, how are you?
I'm here.
Okay.
I'm going to be at a party.
Microphone, hang on.
Oh, technology, gotta love it.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Got me
loud
now?
And clear.
Okay, good. All right,
yeah, stand right there. I'm gonna
put a mark on the floor.
I can hear you now.
I gotta mute the speaker. So I muted the speaker, turned off the microphone. Yeah. Every once in a while, this will happen where all of a sudden I'll hear my voice to the speakers. It just, the connection just ends. It just breaks. And I have no idea what causes it. But it just does that. So I'm listening to the show through my cell phone now. That's okay. We've only got 14 minutes, so it's not the worst thing that's ever happened.
It happens when you speak the truth and
words
are, when you put the words in their proper order, the things happen. It's like the Arabian Nights when they came up to the stone and said, "Open sesame."
Oh, okay. I thought it was "Open says me." You know, like I say, we could end this show early if we want, but you know, this is just kind of crazy. But it'll happen. I'm glad it happened now, not during Dr. Pry's. You know, it only happens about once every 5 or 6 months, and all of a sudden the thing just shorts out. It's just gone. So I'm gonna replace my cords. I've got some mic cords. I replace them every 6 months anyway, just as a precaution. So I think we were talking about
I really appreciate the topic that Dr. Fry bring.
He's amazing.
There's always the probability that you know a lot, but there's still pieces that you just can't find to create the whole puzzle. And he brings those pieces and makes logical sense.
He's a world renowned. He's a world expert on nuclear weapons, physics, EMP, pulse. I mean, the guy's a genius. How did we get lucky enough to get him? I actually found him from the Mark Levin show. I wrote him. He came on one time, and he said, "This is fun. I want to do this again." I'm like, "Okay, great." So, you know, and all during the lockdown, so we were doing hour and a half. We did the entire history of nuclear weapons. I put all those shows on a file on my computer. So I've got like 15 of them, you know, of just all those different weeks during the lockdown where he just came and told us the whole history from the Manhattan Project all the way to modern third generation nuclear weapons. It's fascinating. So I've got a collection of information from him. And I told him, I said, "Look, you know, if you want to tell your family, if you want to, you know, create a library of your work here, this is easy to do. It's all here, you know." So it's been quite fascinating. But where else do you get a chance to talk about the things that we talk about? This is why I don't understand why the show hasn't grown faster, because we have the most amazing people. And anybody's welcome to call. Anybody's welcome to listen. We are growing. It's just, but I think the suppression, you know, some of the things, and this is why I need someone to break this show wide open, like CPAC. I mean, I'm going to call them after the show today. Say, "Hey, guys, here we are, sniffles and all." Try to make something out of all this here. All right, so do you have any ideas? How do we break this show open? Who's got some, other than what we're doing? I don't want to get too much into inside stuff for things I've talked about, but, you know, do I need that Johnny Carson moment? You know, somebody can actually be able to introduce this to the country and say, "Hey, look what I found, Action Radio." I mean, that's why I started doing press releases. This is why I had that idea for the concert. You know, the January 6th, the Jailhouse Rock concert. That's why I did that. You know, so that we could hopefully promote the show.
That's needed.
Do something for the country.
That's needed.
Yeah. Well, I got some people I've been in touch with, some major people who know people. But apparently it's not working yet. We're still getting there.
You can have you can stage a press release, get you a podium, put a couple of microphones
press
there.
I'd love to do press conferences. In fact, I've done a bunch. Well, I've done a bunch of press releases, but we just haven't done the press conference. You know, you've got to be big enough for that. We will get there. Anyway, I'll save the OSHA stuff for tomorrow. I might go over the act then.
You can do a press conference. Just get your room and bring some people in who's either aspiring reporters or is reporters, and let it rip. Get a catch on.
Yeah, the best place to do that, I think CPAC's the best place to do that. If I can get something there, I think it would, you know, if I can get a press conference. Well, say we do a workshop. If I can teach citizen legislative workshops, if we can actually be the first people to write citizen legislation and file it right there in a workshop from CPAC to Washington to the Florida State Legislature to the governor, chances are the governor's going to be there. You know, maybe I'll talk to him directly. You know, so
rent a conference room in the library, invite people there on a particular topic, and they'll come.
Yeah, I'll have to see about the agenda first. First, I want to see if they'll give me a room. Yeah, and as a media person, I think it's free to go there. Otherwise, it's like $250. But I want to go as media like I did last time. Get a press pass. Okay, actually, there's nothing a whole lot I want to talk about today. So maybe we'll enjoy it. Well, everybody's shorter than normally expected. All right, so let me save some topics for tomorrow. I've invited everybody to call in, too. So all our regular reporters, we'll see if we can get some of the other folks to go. I'm just not feeling that good, so that's the other problem, too. Yep, I don't know. Do you guys want to quit early? We've got about like 9 minutes. Should we do it again tomorrow?
Sure. Have a good day. Hope you're feeling better.
Hearing no objection. Yeah, I'm feeling terrible.
No, the thing is, I'm experiencing right now. Yeah.
Okay, sounds good. All right. We'll talk off the air. That sounds good. All right, it's only 10 minutes left.
Have an
amazing show. Thanks, Gene. Thanks, Bianchi. And thanks to Dr. Pry.
Okay.
And listen, we covered a lot in those first 2 hours, plus the half hour with Dr. Pry. So I think we're doing pretty well overall. All right. Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Seeing I have a cold and I really don't want to get started on another topic, we're going to hold it for today. We'll get you tomorrow. So you can catch us, again, blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction and our new website that looks absolutely fabulous. It really does. At www.writeyourlaws.com. That's WRITEYOURLAWS, writeyourlaws.com. Just for fun, I'm going to play my brand new commercial one more time because I really like this one. And then we'll be back.
This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. It contains caffeine, taurine, B vitamins, and potassium. You make your energy drink yourself. Here's how. Add one pack to a standard half liter water bottle or 16 ounce glass to create a full power energy drink. No sugar, no calories, no stirring, no shaking. Strikeforce energy drinks come in original, grape, lemon, and orange. Each flavor pack is a liquid that adds an explosion of flavor to any beverage. Here's the best part. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. That's WYL. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, get a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeforceEnergy.com. Start your engines.
All right, so there we go. All right, I'll be back tomorrow. Take care, everybody. Happy New Year, Merry Christmas, and all that good stuff. And we'll do it again, 6 o'clock Central, 7 Eastern, 5 Mountain, 4 Pacific. The rest of the world, you'll figure it out.